Rob Has a Podcast is made possible in part thanks to the patrons of RHAP who allow me to make one podcast a week for every single one of Debbie's jobs. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, visit us at robhasawebsite.com/patron or click on the banner at the top of robhasawebsite.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who's never part of anybody's original plan, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast voicemail edition of week 6 of Survivor Co. Wrong. And we are going to be talking about your voicemails and the Survivor social media, much, much more here today with great friend of Rob Has a Podcast and a guy who's really just killing it on his own, that he is one of the top, if not the top guy who's doing streaming poker stuff, Jason Somerville. He's been on the podcast a bunch of times before, huge Survivor fan, and looking forward to seeing what he has to say. First time on the voicemails here for Jason about this season of Survivor Co. Wrong. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. Of course, we've done a lot of really fun stuff already this week. We had our Survivor Know-It-Alls with Josh Wiggler. Of course, Stephen Fishback is going to be filling in for Josh Wiggler on The Wiggle Room, still to come over the weekend into Monday. Not sure exactly when we'll get that for you, but Stephen Fishback wants to weigh in with his thoughts on this episode. So that's coming up. Plus, our exit interview with Peter, and then the recap podcast this week with the great Kim Spradlin. Very, very fun to talk with Kim. I highly recommend that you check that out. Of course, you can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. Search for RHAP in your favorite podcatcher or go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to get to our voicemail guest today because it's always a thrill when he comes back here onto the podcast because he's doing a lot of really cool stuff right now. And I do appreciate when he takes some time off from his, the only person who's doing more broadcasting and podcasting than me might be this guy. Here he is, the greatest poker player that I know and the star of Run It Up. The great Jason Somerville. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great. We can ring the bells back at each other all day long. Wow, it's amazing.
Yes.
How are you doing, Rob? It's great to be, this is our first time doing voicemails together, but like our fifth podcast. I'm so excited.
Yes, I'm very excited. And this is going to be a fun episode to talk about, but I really do appreciate you making some time for us this week because I know you just went back to, you do these marathons of like every day in a row of just being on for hours on end, which is which is more than I do. And so how many hours have you broadcast already this week?
So this is now Thursday night. We're recording this. I've streamed for 4 days in a row. I averaged, I think it was like 7.75 average every day. So it's like 8 hours a day for the last 4 days. I'm at like 31 hours in the last 4 days. And we're just getting started every day till May on runitup.tv. You know, I play poker, show the cards, talk about what's going on. We have a good time every day, win or lose. And I'm at least I'm in New Jersey, kind of like home sweet home for both of us, actually, up in northern New Jersey. So it's great to be here streaming. I know the fans were excited. I know we have a lot of voicemails from all the eager, you know, Rob Has a Universe and Run It Up crew. There's a pretty big Venn diagram of the two of us. There's a pretty big, healthy middle section there.
Yeah, there's a nice overlap between the two audiences, which is always nice that we can come on here and talk. We have a lot of people who are poker fans who like to talk about Survivor. And there's a lot of crossover in between, you know, the two games of skill.
For sure. And it's funny, so many people were telling me, they were like, when you do voicemails with Rob, you have to invite him to Run It Up Reno, our big gathering that we do once or twice a year the last couple of years. And we have very exciting news on that front because long before we were going to do voicemails, I had already invited you to come do a entire podcast live at the Peppermill Reno in May. That's going to be absolutely awesome. I'm so excited to have you officially coming to join us.
Yes, you know, and it takes a lot for me to get out of the house. And I'm very excited.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
That I will be with you guys. I know the last one you did back in October, that was right before Anthony was going to be born. And I didn't want to travel then. But, you know, the timing is great for me. Last week in May, end of the Survivor season, pre-Big Brother. It's probably, you know, the slow season of the year for me outside of maybe like 3 weeks in January. So
I'm really excited to get out there and come to the Run It Up event this time around.
It's going to be great having you there. Last time we had Boston Rob, Tyson, and Coach kind of hold down the fort while you couldn't make it. You know, too busy having a baby and all that. I understand. But it's going to be great having you there. And we're going to have some awesome guests joining us this time, too. So hopefully, you know, fans of ours, fans of mine will come and hang out and get to see you perhaps for the first time. Get some Rob Has a Podcast gear while they're there hanging out, play some poker. And of course, some Survivor friends of yours will be joining us, too. I guess friends of ours, I think Tyson will be there. We're going to have to see who else will show up. But more news on that stuff. But I'm so excited to have you there. It's going to be an absolutely awesome event.
Yeah, I'm excited also, one, because no kids will be there. That's
that's true.
But I'm excited to play cards. I'm going to really try to brush up before I go. Tyson is saying, you know, make sure I know what I'm doing before I go out there.
Don't embarrass yourself.
I won't embarrass myself. No more than usual. But also here, we're going to do a lot of podcasting too when we're there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, don't forget, of course, you can hang out, and if you have any questions, you can of course just ask on the stream every day. You know, I'm streaming over there, so you can watch me play poker literally daily. And, you know, if you're listening right now and you want to come hang out with Rob and I, you can find out more about the event, runitupreno.com.
Okay.
And check that out. That's going to be a beautiful schedule there. You can book rooms. It'll be a great, wonderful time.
All right. Runitupreno.com. And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to May. All right. First off, let's talk about this season a little bit and what's been your opinion on this. Are you high on this season so far?
I've been enjoying this season, I got to say. I mean, I feel like the Cagayan was such a good season in comparison to you know, I feel like that was a great season. Generally, so many great characters came out of that season. There was the whole rice being poured into the fire early on, the high drama back then. So the brains versus beauty versus brawn general twist, I feel like, has worked pretty well for Survivor in the past. And I think this season has been very entertaining so far.
It's also a special season to me, the original Survivor Cagayan, because I believe that was the first season that you and I talked.
I think that might have been the one, actually. Wow, that's what you remember of that. Wow,
yes, that's what I think most fondly of about the original Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn.
Sorry, Spencer and Chaos Cast. You guys just didn't make it, right?
And that Tony. Season. Yeah, sorry.
And Tony. Yeah, that's right. Great season that was. Okay. Yeah, our good old Survivor Statistics podcast. I think that was the first one we did back then.
Well, let's go talk a little bit about Survivor and poker. And I guess let's talk about the big thing that came out of last week's show that really has gotten everybody. We spent a lot of time talking about, you know, poker players on Survivor from last week. So let's start off with this question. And this is from Russell in North Carolina.
Hey, Rob and Jason. This is Russell from North Carolina. I was just calling because I'm a big fan of both the podcast and Jason's Twitch stream. And I just had a quick question. Why is it that you guys think that poker players never really do well on Survivor? I've always wondered that. You would think that they'd have a lot of good strategy, but they never seem to do that well. Anyway, love what you guys do, and keep on keeping on. Thanks.
Okay. Like Joe Dirt.
Great voicemail. You know, it's a good question, right? So if you look back, the best poker player by profession that has made a deep run in Survivor is John Robert, right, back in China. Who got like eighth or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think he might have been the second person voted out after the merge.
Yeah, something like that. And it's funny because, you know, of all the people who have been on Survivor, Garrett, Anna, John Robert, is there another poker player that's notorious? I think it's just the three.
You know, it's not necessarily that they're not all like by trade or build as poker player, but you have people like an Albert or like a Jim Rice, people who play poker. And I feel like that Albert plays more poker now after Survivor than maybe he was back then. And then you have somebody like Rob Mariano too, who's not a poker player by trade, but somebody who also plays a lot of cards.
Yeah, well, you know, Boston Rob plays poker every day, he told me. I asked him that recently. So he actually does play a ton.
At this point,
Well, yeah, he's living the good life. You know, what does he else have to do? He just gets to hang out and play poker every day. Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, as far as professional poker players go, you know, I'm not like shocked that they don't do great in Survivor because, yes, there's something very, you know, there's a big intelligent part of the game. There's a very cerebral element of poker that you can apply to Survivor. But, you know, from like a social point of view, you know, I don't know, man, I feel like that's a little more of the awkwardness, right? And I think, as you've seen, although Anna, I thought, did pretty well for herself and kind of was voted out, not really due to her own mistakes as much as the weird, random, weird kind of third, you know, exile island-ish almost kind of third tribe mm-hmm. with Julia thing going on. So I don't think it was really like her fault. You know, it's funny to blame it on variance, you know, as we call in poker, which is just kind of like, you know, bad luck, so to speak. The sample size of professional poker players who have done poorly is pretty small. That being said, though, you know, maybe there's something to do with like the social element. Poker pros aren't as, you know, good at like kind of managing that sort of thing, or at least combining the two. But I don't know. I mean, did you see anything that Anna did that you look back on and you go, wow, she could have survived if only she had done X?
Well, we talked a little bit about this or a lot about this last week in terms of what Anna could have did wrong. And one of the things that we really kind of keyed into is that she didn't have such a great relationship with Ty going into the swap. But just from a bigger picture, that, you know, it's odd because you would think that, OK, well, obviously a poker player is going to be really good at strategy, but maybe it's going to be the physical part of the game. But actually, most of the poker players we've seen on Survivor have actually been pretty good in the challenges. And that really hasn't been it. So you go back to the social part of the game. And I really would love to know from you, in terms of being a great poker player, how important is the social game in terms of poker? Because you're not really making alliances, but I would imagine you don't want to make people hate you unless that's something that, you know, makes people go on tilt. And maybe that is something that you would want. So how important is the social game in poker? And is that something that maybe isn't carrying over to Survivor?
Well, it's funny because it's the person who has done best, John Robert, is actually very good at the social game of poker, in the sense that, you know, there is a lot of the best games, the best poker games in the world. Not talking about tournaments, we're talking about the cash games, right? They're kind of exclusive. You have to really know somebody to get invited into these games. And if you're going to play the same games over and over and over again, you're not going to get invited if you just go and put on your hoodie and your sunglasses and just sit there and you're just like a bleep bloop robot crushing everybody, right? You have to be fun, engaging, interesting, tell stories, listen, right? You have to be entertaining to some extent while you're playing poker in order to network yourself into these opportunities. So there is actually a decent element of social games in some variants of poker. There's also, like, when you play online poker, there's really not a lot of social elements besides like talking strategy with friends, you know, off the table. But there is definitely an element of live poker that is about getting into games. And John Robert is like notoriously known for getting into games where, yes, John Robert is not a particularly great poker player, but you don't have to be particularly good if you're playing with people who are worse than you, right? That's, you could be the eighth best player in the world.
Same is true for Survivor.
Exactly. It's all about comparative edge and not about your like absolute skill set, right? And so that's a big part of poker there, but not surprising that John Robert, the most successful. Garrett and Anna, I don't know either of them personally, so I can't really speak to their actual poker talent. Whereas John Robert, I know, you know, pretty well comparing to the two. And his poker skills are actually very oriented from his social skills. But yeah, no surprise he did the best then of the three.
Can you speak to a little bit in terms of, and again, I'm so far into all of this in terms of like, is Anna somebody who is somebody that you had heard of beforehand, or is she just somebody who plays poker and she may be doing it full time, but she's not somebody who's running in any sort of the circles that you are?
Yeah, I had never heard of her before before she came on Survivor. It doesn't mean that she's not a great player or that she's not even well known in other circles, but I had never seen or heard of her before. And Garrett, at least when he was on the show, I did know he was like, I had friends of friends that knew who he was. But you know, I did not know Anna before she came on.
And Vanessa from Big Brother, do you run into her ever?
Yeah. Now, Vanessa Russo is an entirely different story. I know Vanessa very well. She and I have had several conversations before. I knew her now deceased former husband, Chad Brown, was a very super nice guy, always very friendly, very warm to me. So, yeah, I knew Vanessa very well back in the day. And I actually watched a lot of, my first time watching Big Brother was watching Vanessa. And I thought she did great all in all. I thought that she did an amazing job of using those poker skills of hers and generally you know, being strategic when she wasn't crying. She did great, I thought.
She's probably the gold standard where you'd say, okay, a reality TV poker player, somebody who's billed as a professional poker player, I think she's the person with the best track record.
I mean, I would love to see a guy like Daniel Negreanu come on Survivor, or I know he's always really wanted to, but his whole Canadian, actually, he's an American now. He just got citizenship for Survivor? US now. I think he might have done it for Survivor. He has wanted to do Survivor for so long. He literally just got his citizenship last week or something. So maybe we'll see Negreanu in the next season of Survivor. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I feel like they would bend the rules for him if he really wanted to do it. I don't think that they would let that stop him.
I mean, you wouldn't think so. But, I don't know how that, maybe there's some sort of legality thing with that. But he would be great. And I think he is very social, always, asking questions about other people, making his reads, but very tactical about what he says. And I think he would be the new gold standard if he got on, even though he's so much like, it would be kind of like, how many people that are worth, millions of dollars have one Survivor? It would be pretty hard, right? Pretty rare, generally. He might be the richest person to ever win if he did, in fact, win. But that would be amazing to watch.
A good question of who's the person that had the highest net worth that actually went on to win the game. And, did the people know exactly that? That'd be a good research project to end up figuring out. Next time you put your team on a research project, let's try to figure out
some net worth.
Net worths of survivors pre-winning.
Yeah, let's see how they did. Because you think about Russell, who was some sort of like an oil business guy, right? He had a bunch of money when he was playing Survivor.
That's what the word was, yeah.
Yeah, that's what the word was. Yeah, who knows? And I'm trying to think of if there was anyone who I can particularly remember.
And again, he did not win.
Exactly.
So. Yeah. Interesting to see who that person might be. All right, let's go back to last night's episode and sort of keeping it in the context of poker. Doug has a question for you in terms of Aubrey's decision at that tribal council.
Hey, Rob and Jason, # run it up legion, # dirty basement dwellers. That's right, I got my run it up hoodie on. I want to look at yesterday's tribal through kind of a poker perspective. In poker, it's not all about winning every single hand. Sometimes you have to fold. Even though you might be ahead, you're not quite sure. Well, for Aubrey, when she saw the vote swapping right in front of her eyes, she's kind of left in this spot where she either jams a 3-3 tie, or she just folds, loses one of her members, cuts off what might be the cancer of her foursome alliance, then can maybe work with these people going forward. Obviously, she could have done it better by meeting with them beforehand and discussing it. But for that kind of snap judgment move, do you think that she was just doing simply good gameplay? Let me know.
All right. I would love to hear you talk about this decision that Aubrey made at this tribal council, where it's a 6-person vote. She potentially could go into a 3-3 split. She ultimately decides, I like that metaphor, to fold her hand and ultimately not risk a tie or any sort of, tricky situation that would be a 3-3 split. What was your read on what she did the other night?
Yeah, I thought that it was very interesting that how it kind of all developed. I think that Peter has been one of the characters on Survivor that I have been like most repulsed by his gameplay over the last, I can't even think of the last person who I've just been like, what are you doing? Like, maybe it's just the edit, but it's I don't blame her for feeling like she couldn't trust him in that, like, our caller said in his run it up hoodie. What was his name?
That was Doug. In fairness to Peter, he was super nice on the exit interview call this morning.
Nice. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but he must be a good guy. He's an ER doctor. He's got to be a decent guy. And we all know how the edits are. But listen, one thing I had felt like at the time I had questioned, well, couldn't Aubrey have just voted a tie and then they would have revoted and then she could have then switched her vote to Peter? Mm-hmm. Right? That would have worked out okay. But do you think that there was maybe something to her when she decides to write down Peter's name right then and there? She's kind of like recommitting to the new future of the tribe, kind of leaving Joe a little bit to the side, but he'll probably come back into the fold at least possibly. But by at least not forcing the tie, she's kind of saying, I'm deciding to go with you guys. Did you read anything into that?
At the point that she writes Julia's name down and crosses it out, isn't it for all intents and purposes the same as a tie? I mean, if she really did want to go and work with that group, why not write Peter's name down in the first place and make it seem like, hey, I am boldly choosing to go with you, not begrudgingly, I want to vote for you. Okay, I won't. So I like the move of not going to the 3-3 tie there, because that's going to be a bad situation, because the way that the tie break is going to work, that ultimately Peter and Julia are going to be immune from the tie break, and then we're going to go to Rox for the other four people in the tribe. So she has a 25% chance of going home in that spot. Ultimately,
if she doesn't flip, though, right?
Because if she doesn't flip, right? If it goes to 3-3 tie and then a stalemate again, what's going to happen? Then it'll be that Peter and Julia are the people that are going to be immune from the vote, because that we couldn't come to any sort of resolution. And then those four people, and again, nobody has individual immunity like after the merge. So it'll be four people drawing rocks in that spot. And then she has the 25% chance to go home. So it's really not worth it to keep Peter around, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I actually hope that we get a chance to talk about Julia and how amazing it is that she got to survive what would be a very, dangerous situation, being a 19-year-old girl coming to a tribe she doesn't really know, you know, a lot of the people there. For her to survive that situation, I think, is pretty impressive and a testament to her. You know, Aubrey's decision, if it's legitimate and not theatrical that she just decided to write it that way, you know, she doesn't seem like that kind of a person, but you never know.
But that's a great point, that for whatever reason that Aubrey might say, okay, this is theater, I'm doing it this way, and we didn't get any impression from the show, but maybe she's like, hey, this is going to be great TV for me to do this.
Maybe, right? But let's assume that it's straightforward and she really was that torn, that it just came down to, look, you know what? All this talk about original plan and everything else, like, that was insane. Like you said yesterday, that you were like, it's amazing to see the tribal council living. Like, literally, it was like a living. Is that what the word you used? It was like a living, alive, breathing tribal council. Yeah, it's alive. That's amazing TV, right? That's amazing to see that kind of shift in front of you. And I was surprised that Peter didn't start freaking out. He was kind of like the gazelle by the river as like the lions are circling around him. I kind of felt that he didn't like freak out in any of that. But I'm not sure if it was going to be like the long term better play for her. I kind of feel like, you know, Neil, Debbie, Aubrey and Joe, when they come back together in the merge, you know, they have a foursome that I think could still be repaired. Right. Do you think that there's not a chance that the four brains could continue on this way?
I think certainly, I think that Aubrey and Joe can repair that relationship. And I think that the four brains will be very strong together. I didn't look at it like Aubrey has defected away from Joe. Now, Joe, again, he's pretty set in his ways. He might be really pissed at what Aubrey did.
I mean, talking about like poker reads, like that stare down confrontation with him and Peter, he can't feel too bad about Peter after that whole weird thing. And even in the confessional, he was like, yep, I knew he was lying to me. Like, yeah, they played nice after that, but like, you know, and he was right. He stared him down. He did like the, you tell me right now the answer. And obviously Peter like couldn't tell the truth and didn't even tell a convincing lie. So I think Joe and Aubrey will be okay. Brains could still continue. And you know what? Now Aubrey has the option to reach across, you know, and say, you know what, Julia, I could have voted for you. There could have been a different situation going on here. And maybe now she can cross over and pull in a tie or a Julia that maybe she wouldn't have gotten to help her out once the tribes have merged.
Okay, let's talk about this vote from a different perspective. And this is from the perspective of Scott and Ty. Let's take another voicemail from Matt Forsyth, one of the great voicemail callers. Here is Matthew.
Hey, what's up, Rob and Jason? Matthew Forsyth here. So this week, a lot of people are questioning whether Joe and Aubrey made the right move. But I'm questioning whether Scott and Ty actually made the right move. You know, it seems like an obvious choice that they would want to keep around Julia. But I'm thinking, what if you vote out Julia, and then going into a merge of 11 people, there are still 5 brains left in the game. And that means that it's necessary for the Beauty and the Brawn to team up to take out those 5 brains. As it stands right now, there are 4 brains, there are 4 Beauty, and there are 3 Brawn. And so there are a lot more different permutations of ways that people could mix up and align at the merge. But if you just take out Julia, then everyone has to form an alliance to take out those brains. What do you think? Bye.
Well, this really
very interesting.
Yeah, this speaks to sort of like the big picture going into the merge. And so, you know, as somebody who studies the strategy of this, what do you think about this idea of maybe getting rid of Julia to sort of force this alliance with the remaining members of the Beauty Tribe to make sure that Brawn and Beauty work together, as opposed to keeping, and I would say the conventional wisdom of keeping Julia around as somebody who's going to be a number on that side. But by doing that, then maybe you're looking like the target.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a brilliant potential strategic move, right? If they had said, you know what, if we do this, we'll have a very clear 6-on-5 situation. This is a clear call to action. We can, you know, maybe squeeze out a brain there. And it actually, in doing that, it almost kind of puts like, you know, Peter, I guess, is in kind of a weird situation. You don't know where he is going to defect to. He's the most wild cardy of the brains at that point, right? Of Neil, Debbie, Aubrey, and Joe. I feel like those are all pretty solid in that foursome, with Peter as kind of the wild card. I could definitely see that situation. Jason Scott and Sydney are all pretty tight. And you take the remaining three Beauty Tribe, right? At that point, that'd be Michelle, Nick, and Ty. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me as a potential option. It doesn't seem to me, based on what we've seen so far, that Ty is like kind of thinking on that, sort of like a two steps ahead, seeing how certain votes will shift. I mean, that's a pretty high level thing generally. Do you imagine that in a first time season, people are really kind of like mapping out, like, if X, then Y will happen at the merge? Is that common, you think, or is that sort of high level returning player strategy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some people are, but I think that some people aren't. And I think that's what kind of makes a season like this fun on a different level than a season like last season, where everybody's thinking that way last season. Sure. We're here, some people are thinking that way, and other people are definitely not thinking that way. So it makes a whole different series of roadblocks and obstacles for the players. You know, the thing to me about this is that I love the idea of keeping Peter in the game and somehow splitting up Aubrey and Joe, if you could do that. And when I talked with Peter this morning, I think he certainly made it seem like he was agreeable to that sort of idea, but he felt like that wasn't really on the table in terms of what he had said was that every time he talked about this, he felt like that people like Scott or Julia would go back and narc on him for having these conversations. So he felt a little frustrated that I think he would have been open to the idea of getting rid of Joe. But I love that idea. If you could split up Joe and Aubrey here, because if you are people like Scott and Ty and Julia, if you send the Brains Tribe into the merge when now with just three members plus Peter, I think Peter's not going to stick with them when the chips are down. So you really sort of cripple the Brains Tribe going into that. Whereas if you vote off Julia, I kind of feel like that Peter is going to stick with that group. I think he's going to stick with his numbers of five, and maybe he's going to say, okay, well, maybe he'll read the writing on the wall and say, okay, they have six and maybe I'll flip away from them. But I think that he was always on board with the idea of, hey, they're at least five strong. Let me at least be the fifth wheel with them because they have numbers. Where I love the idea of, if you could split up Aubrey and Joe, then, where, you know, Peter will scramble too, and then they have nothing going on.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at it like that. It's funny when you think about, you said how some players are thinking next two steps ahead, one step, two steps ahead. What is the game board going to look like once we make a certain move here? It's funny because poker is very similar to that too, in the sense that like the best players aren't just playing the street of the hand they're on right now, but they're planning for the streets ahead by sizing their bets in a certain way to be able to be, you know, in a certain position with a certain stack size and things like that. You know, the best poker players are thinking more than just on one level. And I think you're right that there is some very interesting twists that you could have made here in this very critical, like pre-merge sort of vote. But it just doesn't seem to me like Peter had the social skill set to kind of engineer that whole situation. Even him just in the water with Julia, Aubrey, I think it was Aubrey and Joe, who are both like, oh man, look at him go again. What's he doing over there? So I don't know. It didn't seem like he had the social chops to get it done.
One of the things that kind of bummed me out about the conversations that I was hearing last night with a lot of the players, that they were really talking about things as if this tribe was going to continue onward. And so I know you can never assume when you're out there on Survivor, but I think that it seemed very likely to me that Survivor has merged at 11 a number of times in these three tribe seasons, or 12 even, if not. Yeah. So they're down to 12 already. I think it would be very unlikely for the next vote to not, you know, that makes sense. Two episodes after a swap, then comes the merge. And I felt like that they weren't really talking about things in terms of, okay, then we're going to merge after this. They were talking about things, okay, oh, wait, but it's three brains in this tribe and they'll pick us off if we end up, and it was, you know, vice versa. Hey, if we vote out Peter, then there'll be three of them and only two brains here in this tribe will get voted off next. And I just felt like that the decisions that they were making, I felt like they were really making them in the context of that tribe was sticking together for more votes after this. And I really felt like it was safe to assume that they wouldn't be.
Do you remember the last time that they merged at 10?
Oh boy, the last time, it's been a minute. I would have to say probably pre-Heroes versus Villains.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, I feel like that maybe in Token Sheens, if I had to guess off the top of my head, it might have been the last time they had a merge that late. I feel like that, I mean, last season they merged at 13. Many seasons that they've done here have been 12 post-Heroes versus Villains, and a lot of times it's 11. So it's really a sort of, you know, I think actually, you know, it's been a lot of times it's 12 and then the jury starts at 11, where the first person after the merge isn't on the jury, and then some, you know, because then they have the 8-person jury, and then they've even had a lot of 9-person jury. So but a 10-person merge is very uncommon in the modern day Survivor, and I couldn't even tell you the last time they did it.
Yeah, pretty interesting for sure.
Yeah, we have final threes, we have 9-person juries, we had 10-person jury last season, so big juries, big final groupings, and I think that you have to assume, you know, two votes after a swap is going to be, and again, that burned Cass a little bit and company last season, because they figured, okay, oh, we've got two votes after the swap, but it was the second swap, so a little bit different, but definitely, you know, don't be assuming you're going to do three votes after the swap here in the modern day Survivor. All right, let's take a question from Aaron and Christine. They want to talk about Debbie. Everybody loves to talk about Debbie. Here's Christine.
Hey, Rob. It's Aaron and Christine here, and we would like to know how many occupations Debbie has claimed to have, including model as of the episode of March 23rd. And we would like a soundbite, if you could, of Sydney saying, "Damn, Debbie." Love you, bae. Thanks, homie G. Bye-bye.
Wow, love you, bae, and thanks, homie G. All right, let's talk a little bit about Debbie. Are you a Debbie fan?
I'm a huge Debbie fan. How could you not be? She's hilarious. She grew on me a lot, because I thought at first she was going to be like the first one out. You know how sometimes those characters can be. But no, now that she's sticking around, I think she's awesome. I'm a Debbie fan for sure.
She's very good. All right. So Debbie, after the challenge last night, was talking about Michelle and how we need to worry about her. So this is a little clip from that.
Might go drown herself. You guys might want to keep an eye on her.
Damn, Debbie.
And that's Sydney responding to her. So, okay. For Aaron and Christine, here is your...
Damn, Debbie.
Damn, Debbie. That's, I got to say, Sydney is also a great character. I mean, she is amazing, right? I mean, they've really drafted some strong women this season. It's been definitely fun to watch.
Fun season and a really good cast. Okay, so the second part of that was about Debbie's modeling career. You know, we heard early on in the season about Debbie's many jobs. Here is Debbie from the first episode of the season.
I'm a chemist, but I've been a photonics manufacturing supervisor, an electronics expert, a bartender, caretaker to nuns, and between jobs, I fill in at Red Lobster as a server.
Yeah.
Wow. She does it all. She's kind of like you, Rob. She just does everything.
Well, no, I really have just one job, and then I just do a lot of things at that one job. I don't go, I don't really have like a number of different jobs that I go do.
That's true. You're a dirty basement kid, just like me and all my fans over here.
Yeah, except that I'm the opposite of the basement. I'm the upstairs.
You're a dirty attic kid.
You're a dirty attic kid, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay, so then last night, this is what we found out about Debbie as well.
I think Nick looks like a Greek god. He's got finely chiseled bones, absolutely ripped, and the angular features of his face just make for great photography. And I know that because I've modeled off and on for years and years.
Wow, how about that?
Damn, Debbie.
Damn, Debbie. Wow. Also, I have to say, as the expert of the two of us here, I don't know what she's talking about Nick. I'm not sure how Nick is even on the beauty tribe, to be honest. But you can just, yeah, I'm just saying, I'm not really sure. I don't know where else he would belong, but yeah, I don't know. Not my type, at least.
You do not like his angular features?
No, I don't see the angular features that Debbie sees. But then again, I'm not a part-time model, so what do I know?
No, what are you talking about? Your bone structure is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, clearly. Duh. Yeah.
So really, so many jobs for Debbie. But sure enough, you know, people went out there and found her modeling profiles. And you can say that, okay, she's full of it. But Debbie, you cannot say, has not modeled.
Wow. There you go, I guess. Wow. Also, she's like I don't even know what she said. It's like she's a photonic, a chemist and like a photon something.
Photonics manufacturing supervisor. Yeah, I have a whole list of different things that she's done.
It doesn't even sound like a real thing. Photonics, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, she is a woman who is very multi-talented. Do you think that maybe she has a card-playing future?
I mean, sure. Why not? You know, I mean, anybody can do it. That's the best thing about poker. You could just pick up chips and cards and play and win. So, yeah, I'm sure she'll be a World Series poker champion in no time.
My favorite part is still the part-time server at Red Lobster.
Yeah, just in case there wasn't enough there. She's like, and I work at Red Lobster, you know, just in case. What would you like your order?
I'm in between modeling shoots. Let me go pick up a shift.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, but she was really confident. She's like, I'm sure he'll get a modeling contract after this.
Wow. Well, there you go. She somehow just knows it. She must have connections, clearly.
Yeah, well, maybe that she could hook Nick up with the person that got her modeling contract.
What is Nick's current job?
I believe he's billed as life coach, Nick.
Personal trainer, it says on the internet, because I have a cast list pulled up because I was ready for you.
Yes.
So, yeah. From personal trainer, supposedly it says, which is basically means unemployed, right? So yeah, he's on his way. Okay. Personal trainer and part-time model.
Part-time model.
There you go.
If Debbie can pull some strings. Okay. Let's take a question going back to your read on the season. And this is from our good buddy, Brent Walgamott.
Hey, Rob, this is Brent Walgamott, and I have a poker question for the adorable Jason Somerville.
Great bone structure.
I want to know from you, who is the shark on this season of Survivor? In essence, who is the player that you think is going to win it all, the player who is running circles around everybody else? And I also want to know who you think has no chance to win Survivor this season. In essence, who does Jason Somerville think is drawing dead? Thanks, and run it up.
Great voicemails, Rob. These have been awesome.
Yeah.
Drawing dead, I hate to pile on. I just said that I didn't think he was all that attractive, but I think Nick is drawing dead. I got to tell you, if there's one person that is drawing dead, it's got to be Nick. I think everybody else has some amount of chance.
Okay. Let's talk that through. And I want to talk more about Nick with the next question as well. But what is it in particular that's making you feel not so great about him?
Well, I mean, particularly from the last episode, Nick's whole interaction with Michelle, right? It was Michelle that he was talking to. He was kind of like, he has her in his pocket. He was kind of being condescending. And that whole confessional where she's like, no, I don't think so. I mean, it just seems to me like he's a little too aloof of like, he doesn't quite have his finger on the pulse of the tribe generally. And I don't feel like he has deep connections with his beauty tribe mates like Ty. Were there any scenes of Nick talking to Julia? No, Nick wasn't on Gondol, so no, none of that, of course. But I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know, man.
Them talking from the pre-merge or the pre-swap either.
Yeah, I don't remember like when they had that lovely six-person tribe early on, and Beauty was kind of all happy and together. Nick was the one that was kind of out. At least that's how it was kind of portrayed, right? Caleb was so happy when Caleb got evac'd. Everyone was crying. It was so sad, right? I mean, it just felt to me like Nick was kind of the odd one out of that. Of that whole thing. And so I find it kind of hard to imagine how he's going to get himself in with the brain tribe besides, and the Brawn 3 seems pretty tight. So to me, I just don't feel like Nick has a great chance from the social point of view to be able to survive. It doesn't seem like he's got the insight to kind of make that happen. disagree with that? Do you think he has a way better chance?
Well, let me just make the case for him. But I would say if I had to rank the people who is the most likely person to go home this week, I think I probably would have him at number one, just because I think that he fits the profile of the typical merge boot. But I do think that he has put in his lot with, I believe that he is siding with the Braun tribe here. And based on that conversation where Michelle is like, hey, let's go after Jason. It's like, no, Jason, we're not going after Jason. Jason's fine. We're with them. Debbie's just telling you what you want to hear. And we'll dig into more on that in just a minute. But I think he feels like he's with the Braun tribe. So if Jason and Sydney feel like, okay, he is with us, and they look at him as a number, then when you go back and then combine after the merge with Scott, with Ty, and as long as it's not that toxic of a relationship between Nick and Michelle, at least that he knows Julia and Ty and Michelle. And so I think that you could, if there is some sort of newly formed bond between the Braun and Beauty, it would seem odd that then he would be the target. I would say, okay, let's go after brains here. So I would say,
The question wasn't would they be voted out next, it was who's going to win. I find it, even if he survives, I find it hard to imagine that at a final three.
Very fair.
He would then win. Right.
Yeah.
Because think about that final tribal with Nick and any two other people there. I find it hard to see a spot where he would be the favorite at that spot.
Could he get Debbie's vote?
He might get Debbie's vote for sure. That's I guess that's one vote down.
Are you kidding me with those angular features and bone structure?
He would just get up and just pose in a couple different ways as the Adonis that he is, and then they'd all just vote for him. Unanimous. There you go.
But you're right. Okay, so I could see that. Okay. So anybody else you feel like drawing dead?
Let's think. Ty, definitely not. Drawing very live. Julia, I think, could maybe sneak her way through, make some smart alliances. She already survived. The most dangerous part of the game has to be that whole Exile Island, basically, thing she came back from. So that's great. Michelle seems like she's alive. You know, maybe she's not drawing super alive. Michelle's kind of had sort of an invisible edit, I feel like. She hasn't really been too prominently featured too much. Neil definitely could win. Debbie, I feel like, would be an interesting person to get to the final three. Probably wouldn't win, but could. I can see it. Aubrey, definitely. I think Aubrey could be one of the bigger favorites. She seems like she's very cerebral. I think she has a good feel of what's going on. She has good relationships. You know, I've really been impressed with Aubrey so far. Joe, I don't know, man. I don't know if Joe could win, but no. I'm not going to count him out.
I'd count him out.
Okay, you're going to count him out, so you say no. Maybe Joe is another one else drawing dead. And then of the Braun three, I think all three of them have a decent shot. I could see Scott going deep. He seems like he has a good sort of personality. One of the more like chill athletes that I can remember of late. We've had some certainly loud personality athletes. John Rocker comes to mind recently. You know, like I think Scott actually seems like he's playing a decent social game. And as a person who already has millions of dollars, is not a bad person to take to the end. And maybe then he makes some sort of an argument there that wins. But I think Jason is actually one of my picks to go deep. And also, you got to remember, Scott also now has knowledge of, does he have knowledge of both idols or just one?
Both.
Yeah, both. So that's a very powerful spot to be in for him. The only person in the game that knows of both of the idols, right? With the new superpower this season, that's a very powerful place to be. So I definitely think Scott is towards the favorite side of things. And Jason, I think, is up there, too. He seems like he's got a really great game, despite getting no confessionals yesterday. Literally zero, right?
He's very invisible yesterday in terms of confessional. So then who would be that number one pick? Is it Jason for you?
I think it's Jason, not just because we're fake name brothers, because I know his first name is like Kyle, right?
Yeah, Kyle.
Yeah. But I think Jason is one of my picks. I think if I had to pick my top three most likely to win, I think it's, and I gotta say, I like Neil a lot too, but I think it's Aubrey, Jason, and then that third spot is like kind of I don't know, maybe it's a Scott, maybe it's a Sydney, maybe it's a Neil. I'm not really sure, but I think Aubrey and Jason are my two favorites if I had to bet. Well, how about you? Do you feel like that's realistic?
I was asked this question last week on the voicemail podcast, and I said Aubrey. I still feel okay about her. We'll see where it goes. I thought that she had a good week story-wise. The decision, I feel like I just didn't love the indecisiveness about what she ultimately did, even though I think it was the right decision. I would have loved to have seen her make that move, but also come away with more for what she did and sort of be in the good graces of the three people that she switched with. More so, and sort of like really win their favor over by doing that. But basically, make a better deal out of what she ended up doing as opposed to doing it more begrudgingly at Tribal Council. Sydney, I think, would probably be somebody else who would be really high up on my list as well, because I really like that position she's in, where I don't think she's going to be a target. I think she's surrounded by people who are going to be making more noise and be bigger targets. And I think that she's played a very under-the-radar smart game so far.
For sure. Completely agree with that. And I think you're totally right that when it comes down to it, if you had to vote out from a threat point of view, Jason, Scott, Neil, I mean, there are so many people who are bigger threats than her. And she's kind of just like quiet. And she had said, I forget where she went to school, but she went to some brilliant genius sort of Ivy League college, right? And then she's also a physical challenge. So I think she's got the whole package. She's got tight alliances. She's been playing the game great. She's got physical prowess. And, you know, she seems intelligent. So she kind of combines brawn, beauty, and brains.
Triple threat.
She's the all-in-one.
Yeah.
She's the monster of the season.
Okay. Let's bring in the always solid syrup guy has a question about Nick and Michelle and their future working together.
Rob and Jason, what's up? Syrup guy calling in from Canada. My question is about the merge and beyond. And with us getting to see these new tribal dynamics of everyone together, I'm specifically wondering, what do you guys think is going to happen with Nick and Michelle? This episode showed us that they were not getting along. Nick was being a huge douche. I really thought the episode was setting up that Michelle was going to flip on him and he was going to go home. So where do you think they lie? Are they both going to go with beauty? Or do you think they'll end up voting against each other in separate alliances? Love to hear you guys' thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah. A lot of people did come away with that takeaway that Nick is a douche. This is a voicemail I got from one of our callers, Bob, who said,
"Wow, Nick is a douche."
That was it. That was the entire call. 3 seconds. Called in just to say,
"Wow, Nick is a douche."
Wow. I mean, I definitely see that. I definitely see it. But it's funny because your friend Syrup Guy. Is that
Syrup Guy.
Syrup Guy. Yeah, he said that he characterized it as a confrontation, but to me it didn't seem like a confrontation. The way that it was displayed to us was that Nick felt like it was going fine. It was just Michelle was the one who was like, "All right, listen, not really is this going fine." Like, she even said that this is the kind of guy in my personal life that I would like never talk to, never hang out with. So to me it's kind of like a one-sided conversation here. Kind of like coach-esque in a way, right? Where like we're just like, what is going on? So yeah, I definitely see, and I think that's a bad sign for Nick, right? Like if that's how people are reacting to him, that they're just kind of like rolling their eyes behind their back and just kind of saying something to his face, but not feeling that same way separate to that. I think it bodes poorly for his chances. And I think Michelle has the best option here, right? She either stays with Nick if that's what's best for her, or she tells Nick, "Yep, okay." And he's like, "Got her in my pocket." And then she goes off and does her own thing. So yeah. I think it's a great spot for Michelle.
I think that this is probably one of the most interesting things about this episode of the other night, because I talked about this with Kim and on the Know-It-Alls, and I felt like, one, it was such a great scene from Michelle's perspective, because she really got to tell him off in the confessional by saying,
"Bro, I know."
Yeah. And finally, the quote that really, I think, made a lot of people start to look at Michelle differently was,
"I don't need to be carried, bro.
I don't need to be carried, bro." Yeah.
"I don't need to be carried, bro.
Bro, I know.
I don't need to be carried, bro." And this really got people talking about Michelle in a whole different light, where even our own Stephen Fishback started tweeting about, do we think that with the visibility spike that Nick is the merge boot and Michelle gets credit, confirming her hashtag winners edit? And Sophie started tweeting, "I don't need to be carried, bro," is perhaps the most obvious winner quote in history. So I guess CBS basically spoiled the season.
"I don't need to be carried, bro."
So does this change your view on Michelle? Do you think that this is the beginning of a winning arc for her? because I have still so much to say about her, this conversation with her and Nick, and the, you know, these two very different reads on what was going on.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting dynamic. It's funny because if you ask me to name like one memorable scene that Michelle has been in prior to last night's episode, I would have some problems thinking of like her like an iconic scene she was in prior to now. Maybe I'm just not thinking of it, but I can't think of
bro,
like,
I know.
So she's finally getting her time. Finally, bro, she's entitled. So come on. Yeah. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is the beginning of Michelle madness. And we're going to just see her, you know, quietly throw around her tribe mates for a little while now. Who knows? I'm not so sure. I don't have the wisdom of a Sophie, but maybe. Do you feel like that could be the case? Is this the beginning?
I don't know. I'm not closing the book on it, but I'm also not a huge subscriber to this yet. I think I need to see a lot more. I'm not ready to quite drink the Kool-Aid on making her one of my top winner picks at this point. But you know, going back to last night, I really felt like, okay, well, what is really happening here? And I really wanted to see if I could figure this out. And I spoke with Kim right after the episode, and then I spent a lot of the day, I was rewatching this, and I really wanted to get to the bottom of this question. So when Debbie goes to Michelle and she says, hey, look, okay, here's what we could do. She says, maybe, you know, Jason is somebody who really gets on my nerves. I really want to see a woman win this game. And then yeah. Michelle came away from that conversation. Okay, great. Debbie's ready to work with me, and Nick was basically in the conversation with her.
No pumpkin, no.
And said, no, people are just being nice to you. They're not telling you what you want. So I went back and I wanted to look at that conversation with Debbie and Michelle. And when Debbie says the thing about, well, you know, Jason is the person, he's lazy, and I really don't like the way he acts around camp. When she says that part, she's looking at the ground. She's not looking at Michelle when she says that. And I felt like that was very bad body language in terms of Debbie telling Michelle something truthful. She did start to look at her and engage her when she said, I really want a woman to win this game, which may be entirely true. But the part about that she wants Jason out of the tribe, I felt like she was being disingenuous with Michelle.
Interesting. It's really interesting for you to go back and look at like body language like that. I think that's a really I think it's an awesome thing to do to kind of get a read for how people are actually delivering, you know, their messaging in that sort of thing. That's interesting. I really am not sure. I did also pick up on her whole that she wants a girl to win from Debbie. I mean, that seems kind of obvious. It'd be like me playing and saying I want a man to win. Yeah, me. Right. Like it's like, yeah, of course. Yeah, okay, bro. Like, yeah, sure, I get it. But like,
bro, I know.
I also don't even know if that's true, right? Like, Debbie, I mean, I don't know. Like, you're right that I think that is probably true, of course, but is Debbie willing to sacrifice Neil and the other guys that she has? No, I think Debbie just is keeping her options open, right? It seems like one of those things you can just say and it's like a free roll. Either she'll believe you and it's great, or she doesn't believe you, which I guess, you know, how bad can it be? Yeah. I don't know. I'm interested to see how this whole thing kind of develops.
Okay. Well, hang in there because I believe I have the smoking gun as to whether or not Debbie is being genuine with Michelle about that she wants to work with her, or if she and she wants to vote out Jason, or if Nick was right and that Debbie was just telling Michelle, just being nice to her, and Nick can't trust what Debbie is saying. This is a secret scene from Debbie talking about Michelle in the challenge. This secret scene is called Michelle Blew Up. Okay, this is Debbie.
Michelle blew the reward challenge for us. Two knots, simple enough. Not only did she fudge our reward challenge, she almost blew our previous challenge by not being able to carry a pole. Had it not been for Sydney throwing this pole up on a notch, we'd have been done there. Or the fact that Neil and I could solve a puzzle in 30 seconds. Michelle apologized and then went off to sulk and cry by herself. There was no consoling her, which, you know, if that's her way, that's fine. I've reached out. I've told her not to worry. You know, I'm just trying to make the girls' time here as enjoyable as possible. I don't see the point in being out here and being miserable. There's enough things to do besides sulk and be anxious-ridden. So she's a nice young girl. Michelle is a nice young girl. Why make it hell and let her know her head's on the chopping block? What I need her to do is get wood, look for coconuts, be somewhat productive.
Okay, so I think that let's not get carried away with this Debbie and Michelle bond here, because my takeaway on that is that Debbie is not crazy about Michelle. And I think that Debbie, while she might vote out Nick next week, I do not think that Debbie is ready to, you know, take Michelle on board.
Yeah, that definitely sounds right to me. It's funny because if Michelle hadn't slowed down Chan Lo so much, that definitely it seemed like they were going to win that challenge. I mean, they were so close. How many more shots would they have gotten if they hadn't been slowed down there by Michelle with the whole like diving situation going on there? Definitely seems like that seems like it indicates that Debbie is not as fond of Michelle as maybe would otherwise be indicated.
And just to go back to last week's conversation where Debbie grabbed Sydney and said, hey, you're ripped. You're just like me. We can do pull-ups. And I really want a woman to win this game. I feel like that a person who's going to be strong in the challenges really is appealing to Debbie. And as Nick said last night, Debbie is looking for somebody. She likes people that are like herself. Somebody who's not doing great in the challenges, I don't think really speaks to Debbie as much as somebody who is really like a Sydney. So I think that Debbie is probably also more aligned with, now again, who knows what happens after the merge. And now I do think that I don't see Michelle being a target post merge, but I do sense that if they went to that tribal council last night, Michelle would have been voted off.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. I mean, who else would have been? You have Nick, Sydney, Debbie, Jason, Neil, Michelle. Who else would have gone? Nick or Michelle, right? I mean, Sydney, Jason, Debbie, Neil seem pretty solid. It would have been Nick or Michelle, right? And probably not Nick. So Michelle probably would have been the one to go.
I mean, who knows? You know, things change. And maybe they say, okay, well, actually, Nick is going to be a physical threat after the merge. So maybe let's take him out here. But it did seem as though from what Debbie was saying, which confirms what Nick was saying, was that Michelle's head was on the chopping block there. Now, in to sort of on the other side of the ledger, that Nick did, I think we can all agree, did a really bad job. And so he had the right read on the situation. Debbie probably was just being nice to Michelle, but he relayed that information to her in a way which made her really come away saying,
wow, Nick is a douche.
Yeah.
Bro, I know.
You know, it just goes to say that so Nick had the information right. He had the right intelligence of, okay, here's what's happening, but he delivered that news to her in a way that just made her say, like, you know, I want to vote you out.
Yeah.
It's a makes tough sense game. To me. It's a really hard game.
I love to watch Survivor in just the straight through without watching it week to week. You know, you always promote Rob Has a Podcast, Amazon combination. You know, Amazon Prime, you can now watch almost every season of Survivor straight through.
Wow. I've been watching
some of the old seasons just straight through. And it's amazing. You can go back and kind of like watch the ripple effects of this happening, makes this happen, makes this more. You know, it's amazing to see these little things. And it's funny when we look at these sort of moments, like between Nick and Michelle and between Debbie and Michelle, it's going to be fun to see how this kind of unfolds. If you haven't checked it out, by the way, so many people ask me about like my favorite Survivor season, Amazon Prime. If you're an American, you got to just check these seasons out. There are so many now. What's the Amazon Rob link? You know, I know, you know, what
the robswebsite.com/Amazon.
There you go. Yeah, for all your Amazon needs.
So what is your favorite season?
Oh man, it's tough because now, thanks to you, I definitely feel like the seasons that have people that I know in them now, I like to go back, like, you know,
it's,
you know,
hard.
Tyson let me stay at his house in Utah. I got to hang out with Tyson for 2 days thanks to you, Rob. So I feel like, you know, Tyson's seasons were great. I don't know. I would have to really think back. The fans versus favorites season with Saree and Parvati, Eric and Amanda. Oh my God, that has to be one of my favorite seasons of Survivor ever. The Russell seasons, all great, 19 and 20. I really liked those two. Boston Rob's, when was that, 22?
22, also, Redemption Island.
Was also great, yeah, so one of those. But I've been a fan, man, since, I think I haven't missed a season since 12, 13?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and then I went back to watch your season after I found you a few years ago through a fan that put us, that connected us all together, Alex, who's come to your live events a few times, come to my live events a few times.
Sure.
And so, yeah, then I went back and watched some more of the beginning seasons. But Yeah, haven't missed an episode since, man, 7 years ago now.
Let's keep this conversation going about Michelle and where she stands in chances to win the game. This is a question from Graham.
Hey, Rob. It's Graham from San Francisco. Michelle and Julia in the earlier stages of the game were seen as Anna's 2 and 3. But entering the merge with a lot of weird tribe dynamics, each of them are in interesting positions. Julia is in a situation with Scott and Ty, and possibly Aubrey joins in as well. And Michelle's in a situation where her and the Brains could work together, and she's talked about straying away from Nick, because she doesn't need to be carried, bruh. My question is, who of the Beauty Girls' chances do you like better going into the merge? Do you see them at an equal playing field, or does one have an edge over the other? Love to get your thoughts, bruh.
Bro, I know.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about this, because I actually feel like that even though Michelle, I think, was on the chopping block last night, coming into the merge now, I think that both Michelle and Julia would be very, very untraditional merge boots to go home this early. I think that it would be like, it would seem odd for me for Braun and Brains to get together and say, you know who we got to get rid of? Michelle and Julia. One or the other. Those are the two we got to go after. So I kind of feel like now they're going to have some room to work here. So who do you think might be in the better spot?
I got to say, I think there are reasons that you could like either of them, right? Like, I think I feel like Julia's survival at this weird spot as a 19-year-old girl, one of the youngest people to ever play a Survivor, right? They only recently made it 18 and up a few seasons ago, right? Maybe like 5-10 seasons ago at this point. Is that true?
Yeah.
So, you know, she's one of the youngest players to ever play. She had to come back from the situation. She seems to me like she has a pretty good relationship with Ty and Nick. And I don't know how Michelle and Julia feel about each other, but it seems like they're at least friendly. I don't remember there being any sort of conflict.
I would think that they are tight, you know, considering that they were both really close lieutenants of Anna. I think it would be odd to think that there was some friction between the two of them.
Yeah. So I could see that, you know, Julia has kind of like, she could go under the radar. She could kind of hang out. And I think that there are some merits to her. I mean, do you agree with that? That she's like, you know, I think she's got a solid chance. I don't think she's got a great chance or a terrible chance, but she's, you know, she's alive. She has nothing, no strikes against her, and she's done a good job surviving so far.
I mean, I know that there are the Michelle's winner edit truthers out there, but take aside the quote,
I don't need to be carried, bro.
Putting that aside, I felt like that Julia did a lot more in this episode than Michelle did. And I think that I'd be higher on Julia's chances moving forward than Michelle.
Yeah. It's funny, if you think about like chances to survive, who do you like more to like make it to the final, let's even say like final five? Because I think I like Julia's chances better to make it to the final five. But I think if Michelle makes it to the final five, I kind of feel like she'll probably have thought it through maybe a little bit more, have better relationships. Like if she navigates herself to that spot, I think she'll be more in position to win. Right. I find it kind of hard to imagine Julia winning this thing. Do you know the youngest Survivor winner ever?
Well, I believe that there's been a number of 21-year-olds that have won, including our own Jenna Maraska. Sophie, I believe, is also 21 as a winner.
But never a 19-year-old, though. That's never 19, 20.
No, not a 19-year-old. So,
yeah, that would be a new thing in that way, at least. It seems tough. I find it just generally hard. Listen, as someone who many of my 19, 20-year-old friends won millions of dollars, and it was just like disgusting to watch them then blow it as they won the money. I feel like, I don't know. I find it hard to imagine that a tribe of adults would pick a 19-year-old. It'd have to be such a crazy scenario for that to come about. But I think Michelle definitely could win. Whereas I think Julia could go deep, but I find it hard to fathom her engineering herself a path to the gold.
Bro, I know.
Do you think that's crazy?
I actually was really impressed with her, though, last night in terms of coming back, and she did not sulk. She did not. I mean, if you listen to that quote that Debbie was saying about what Michelle was like after the challenge, and we saw Michelle go off into the water, you know, I did feel like that Julia came into the game and she's like, okay, I'm going to try to hear Peter out. I'm going to try to win him over. I'm going to, you know, she was able to have this good relationship with Ty and with Scott. I thought she really conducted herself really well at Tribal Council. So I was impressed with Julia. I think that both of them are in a decent spot now at the merge, because I don't think anybody's coming for either of them. And I think that they could be potentially, you know, they could find themselves final six, final seven before anybody wakes up and says, hey, you know, these two have a really tight bond. Maybe we should break them up.
You'd definitely be right. We'll have to see.
All right. We touched a little bit about immunity idols. Let's take a question from Lawson, who wants to talk about what might happen with one of these newly minted superpowered idols after the merge.
Hey, Rob and Jason. It's Lawson from Minnesota. My question has to do with what the possibilities are that we see either the super idol or we see two or three idols played at the same tribal council. We know that Neil has one, and that Jason has one, and that Ty has one. And we've seen that there's a possible link between Ty and Jason. There's also a possible link between Jason and Neil. So what are the odds that we end up seeing either a super idol or we see two idols used at the same tribal council?
All right, let's talk about this super idol. Do you think we're going to see it this season?
I think that we've seen the ingredients for this happening, because we already have that Scott link. Like we were like Graham was just Lawson was just talking about, right? Yeah, I think we've already seen that link exist with Scott, and he like immediately was pointed out that he is one of the only the three people who even knows that there is an ability to create a super idol, right? So I think we're going to see that potentially come into play. But I don't know. Wouldn't it be kind of bizarre if it just never happened? It was just like a thing that existed but just never came into play. Has that happened in Survivor history where they put in a twist like that and it just never came to fruition?
Well, I mean, going back to the last time that there was this superpower idol, when Tony had the Tyler Perry idol, Tony had it. He never played it. It was a thing. And, you know, Tony told people that he had it like past when you could even use it. So it turned out to be a very effective weapon for Tony, even though it was something that was never played.
It was more like a bluff, like a threat at that point, almost.
So I think that the fact that if it's something that Scott knows about, it's something that might bring Ty and Jason together to potentially use it, even if it never ends up being fired in the game, I think that's something that has affected the strategy. So I don't think it's that weird that it's in there if they don't end up using it.
I thought one of the weirdest things that made the cut was when Jeff had asked about has there been talk of idols in the game generally? And I forget which tribal council this was, but Joe is like, I don't think there even are idols in play. This is just a classic season. They just put no idols in play at all. It's like that seemed to be kind of funny to me. Like, that would be somehow the twist. The twist is that nothing is out there. So I don't know, man.
You know, we talked about this last week on one of the podcasts, and I think actually we talked about this with Wiggler on the Wiggle Room last week, where I said maybe that's what Joe thinks, but don't you think that's possible that maybe that could be a bluff? I mean, these things at Tribal Council, it's very hard to take them at face value, because what are people saying for the other players to hear, and what are people saying because that's what they actually believe? So I want to give Joe the benefit of the doubt there. Maybe he doesn't think that, but I mean, we saw him to be a very sharp guy, you know, in terms of I could tell Peter is lying, and while his methods were poor, he definitely did have the right read that Peter is somebody who was working against him.
Yeah, you're definitely right that maybe he's just running the bluff at Tribal Council. I mean, I think that it's a favorite that we're going to see the super idol make an appearance, but maybe you're right. Maybe it never happens. To me, it just seems like it's too powerful not to try if you're aware that it could be there, right? There are three idols in play. Not that hard to find a way to figure out and engineer a pairing, do some sort of a really wonky sort of blindside. I mean, do you think it's a favorite that we're going to see the super idol, or
I bet against it, because for it to have like, let's come up with the scenario where it ends up happening. You would have to have where, you know, Ty and Jason's fates are completely locked together, where let's say the first vote after the merge, let's say that for some reason, you know, Beauty and Brains comes together and they blindside Jason at that tribal council. He doesn't play his idol. Scott knows Ty has the idol. If Scott says like, hey, quick, Ty, give Jason your hidden immunity idol so he won't be voted out, Ty might say,
no, pumpkin, no.
I mean, Why did it would Ty give up his idol just to save Jason in that spot, or vice versa? True. If it's Ty that gets blindsided and Scott says, quick, Jason, give Ty the other half of your idol, that Jason is probably also going to say, you know, absolutely not.
That would be so awkward, too, if that actually happened, like that post vote out elimination. Whoa, do you guys want to do this? Like, it's going to make other people kind of freak out, I would think. That would be kind of hilarious TV moment.
Yeah, you have to out one of your allies, potentially, in front of everybody that they have the idol. Like, I don't have an idol. What are you talking about, Scott?
Yeah.
So I think that for the actual circumstances to have that work out, you'd have to have two people know what was going on. And instead of like just one person playing their own hidden immunity, because if you have that knowledge that, hey, the votes are coming this way, it's almost like that this would be something if you were going to try to, if you knew a vote flush was coming, where it's like, okay, me and you both have a hidden immunity idol, but everybody else knows that you have a hidden immunity idol, or they don't know that that we can put our idols together, and they're going to split the votes, you know, three votes on you and three votes on me. Well, what we should do is whoever ends up getting voted out, whoever they end up in the tie break, we'll put our two idols together and then we'll stay in the game and one of them will go home. The chances of that exact circumstance happening, I have to feel like, are so incredibly small, where even if people know that they can do it, I feel like for that exact circumstance to have happen, where unless you have somebody like Jeremy last season who ends up with two idols at the same time, if that was to happen,
sure,
then I would say that I you know, it definitely will be used, or it would be extremely likely. But for two people's fates to be so tied together, no pun intended, I feel like that I would say it's unlikely that it'll happen.
Yeah, that's a very reasonable analysis. Now that you've pointed that all out, maybe it is rarer than I thought. I just felt like the chance of either someone finding two, some close alliance finding two, and then, you know, deciding how they want to kind of pool that together, or just somehow there being a situation where the people who don't have the numbers, they have one idol somehow and then figure out a way to make something big happen that way, but equaled like more likely than not. But maybe you're right. Maybe it is a underdog to be played that way.
And I don't think that Neil is going to be turning his key with Ty, maybe with Jason. That's possible, but I don't, even if Scott gets them together, the full-on menage a trang with like, you have your idol, you have your idol, don't you understand what we could do together? I think to find that right spot where maybe if they both, we would save Scott, you know, Ty seemed like a nice enough guy, he would save his friend. I don't know if Jason is a nice enough guy to save his friend. It's a tricky spot, but I'm looking forward to it. A lot of intrigue, I think, involved. So
do you think that, let's say that the Super Idol is not played this season, do you think that this is a mechanic that they bring back in like the next season or in future seasons? Like, how do you feel about the mechanic generally?
Oh, I say, you know, why not let it be a thing? I don't think that you have to necessarily, I mean, it might be a thing that might take 3 or 4 seasons for it to actually happen in that circumstance. Like, I don't see that why it would be a bad thing or something that's hurting the game that you could combine two idols to make a super idol. But I feel like that it just might be something that's super rare and almost never happens.
Gotcha.
You know, I feel like how many times, you know, in a season where we see two people put their idols together, like I kind of like that it might be, ooh, it's something that happens only once every 3 seasons or so.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
All right. Here is a question that is from Phil in British Columbia. Phil wants to know about casting of a somebody on Survivor.
Hey, Robin, Jason, it's Phil from BC, and I'm kind of lit right now, okay? The bad boy of podcasting and the bad boy of Twitch Poker on One podcast. It's kind of making all my fanboy dreams come true right now. I'll try to get through this without sucking too many kneecaps, but yeah, okay, we've seen Jean-Robert and Anna-Kate take a stab at Survivor and go busto before the money both times, so when will we see the great Jay Carver register the CBS 1 milli high roller and ship that Survivor money for all the dirty basement kids? And not really sure if Rob will understand that at all, but run it up, Warriors, you know, we do it big. Love you, Bays, and cap of pride, so goodbye.
I got the most of it. I think so. I think I understand everything. Nice. That's going on there. So
Rob, I'd love for you to come on Twitch, Rob. When are we going to see Rob has a live stream on Twitch? That's what I want
to
know.
Yeah, well, I need to know more about it. Are people doing Twitch who aren't playing games?
Yeah, there are totally talk shows and things like that on Twitch. Now, most of people are playing games of some variety. That is true. But people still stream on Twitch all the time. It's a great thing to do if you're not just, if you're sometimes doing... They do talk shows. There's a talk show category. It doesn't do great, but it does exist.
Yeah, I'd play around with it. I'd see how it works. You know, it's like the Super Idol. I'd see how it goes. I'm open to it. Well, all right.
I'm sure the fans would love to see it. As far as me leaving the dirty basement to go to play Survivor, man...
Is it tempting at all? I mean, you're doing so many different things and so many successful things. Is it something that even is, that you are considering?
If they literally called me and said, we'd love for you to get on a plane. You know, today is March 25th. If they said, we'd love to get you on a plane June 1st and we'll send you to, some scary place far away and you'll play Survivor, it would be great. I would seriously have to consider my choice. But I, generally speaking, I'm a very happy person living in my basement, streaming every day. Also, for months, I wouldn't be streaming. Everyone would be so sad. I'd be getting all these tweets that I have to come back to, all these disappointed people that haven't been streaming for months. So I'm not like actively looking to do it because Rob, I eat the same thing every day. I eat macaroni and cheese and turkey burgers every day. Rob, I've heard there aren't too much of that out in Survivor. The worst thing possible would be they'd be like, oh, here we've got this beautiful reward challenge. It's this delicious Asian food, and I'd be like, nah, I'm good. Like I don't even like.
So do you only eat macaroni and cheese and turkey burgers?
I eat the finest whole wheat macaroni and cheese money can buy and. Turkey burgers, and then of course I have like salads and like frozen yogurt, like fruit and vegetables, sure. But for like meal food, no deviation. Like I just don't eat very many things. I feel like that would be the biggest challenge for me would be the eating, and never mind the whole like being outside for 2 months straight. I'm used to being inside for 2 months straight. That's easy. Outside though, that's tough.
Now, do you eat macaroni and cheese and turkey burger for lunch and dinner, or just once a day?
Now, you may think that this is a joke, Rob, but for the last like 300, let's call it the last year, I have had whole wheat macaroni and cheese for breakfast and a turkey burger for dinner 98% of those meals. That's it.
So, and no lunch?
No, because I'm streaming all day. So I eat before the stream, eat after the stream, and that's it. That's it. What can you do? Go to bed, wake up, do it again. You're used to that life.
Yeah, that's for sure. I have a more diverse meal plan, though. Is any part of it? Is it like luck for you at all? Is it like that? Like Wade Boggs, like had to eat chicken before every baseball game, or is it just that's only like what you like?
No, I've just developed my routine that I just like eating those things, and I feel like I can stream. I have perfect energy. I don't take breaks, Rob. I just stream 8 hours straight, not even a 5 minute break. So I need the energy to get me through the 8 hours of streaming, and then the turkey burger is like the reward at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's like, good job. Here's a turkey burger.
I feel like mac and cheese is something like I feel like it's like a food that slows you down. I feel like you kind of want to take a nap after macaroni and cheese.
No. No, that's just not how it works for me, dude. It's just fuel. It's fuel that lets
the whole wheat mac and cheese.
That's the key. It's that delicious Annie's whole wheat macaroni and cheese. Good.
So what do you eat a whole box before you start?
Yeah, whole box, one serving of macaroni and cheese. What can I say? It's a true story. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well,
the moral of the story about the Survivor thing goes is like, if I had to, I would really have to think about it. I'm the kind of guy that is a preparer, right? Like even for this podcast, like I took notes, prepared, wrote down tribes, looked up things, right? If they told me, oh, come on the show tomorrow, I would really need to learn like how to make a fire, how to live outside. Like I couldn't.
You don't need to know that stuff.
Yeah. That, I don't know. I mean, look,
there'll be other people that know that stuff.
Yeah. But I don't want to be, when there's that guy who's like sitting around, and everybody's grumbling because he can't do anything, doesn't know how to do anything, he's bad in challenges. that's what I would be like, Rob. I don't want to be like that. Come on. Yeah,
nobody should be like that. I gotta have some utility.
Yeah. So I feel like I would have to like practice and train and like, try to go outside for a couple hours at least, see if I liked it. But who knows? Okay.
But you're open to it.
And that's funny because people... I'm definitely open to it. People always say, oh, how about Big Brother then? But the fact is, I could never live in a house with people. I couldn't live in the house with like two people for 3 months. Never mind a whole house of insane humans. So that would
You wouldn't want to live with that many people? That's really what it comes down to?
Well, it comes down to that. And also the fact that like first place is like $250,000 or something, isn't it, on Big Brother? It's like, it's a half million. But then second place is like a huge payout jump, right? It's like 50K to 500.
Right, 50K.
Yeah. I would much rather just stream every day. It's almost like Big Brother anyway. 8 hours, people watch me
right.
talk.
You're so on the live feeds anyway.
It's like my own Big Brother. I'll just put some more cameras in my house and people can donate money to me. That sounds way better than going on Big Brother.
Yeah, and probably more lucrative.
I would guess so. I would guess that's right. Maybe what we should do, Rob, I guess you have kids and a wife, which would otherwise prevent this. We could have a streaming house. Where it's just like a Big Brother nonstop podcast, get Wiggler there and everybody else just hangs
podcast
out.
Podcast house.
Recap.
Right.
The podcast palace. Right. I love it.
Yeah, I'm open to it, but we'll do it at your place.
Yeah, okay. Come on over to Happy New Jersey.
Yeah. Post-divorce, I think I'm into it. Okay. All right. Let's take a question from Mikey the Chimp, wants to know about the merge.
What will be the most interesting interactions between people who have yet to meet, who will meet at the merge?
Mikey the Chimp is really the master of the short voicemail, although the shortest voicemail this week still.
Wow, Nick is a douche.
Yeah. So the merge interactions that have yet to
first
be
time meetups.
So let's analyze who will be first time meeting. So we have from Gondol, is this be the first time Ty and Sydney would have met?
It will be, but I think that this short list has to start with Ty and Debbie.
Ty and Debbie. Okay, yeah, that's got to be the first time. You're right. So
ding,
true.
Ka-ching, ka-ching.
That's going to be just an explosion of personality unlike we have ever seen before on Survivor, as far as I can remember. I mean, I mean, Ty and Debbie, you're right. That's going to be
That's the headliner.
Nuts.
That's the main event.
That's the headline. You're definitely right about
that.
Will
they like each other?
Of course. I mean, Ty likes everybody. If Ty doesn't like you, you're in trouble.
You didn't like Peter.
He didn't like Peter, which, based on what we saw, don't really blame him. So, yeah, I think they'll get along. I think they'll love each other, and it'll be lovely and amazing. Who is your co-main event?
Well, I think we're either doing different people that haven't met Debbie and different people that haven't met Ty. I think Ty and Jason is fascinating. What's that going to be like?
Oh, yeah. Ty and Jason could be an interesting combo for sure. You'd think those two would not mix, but you know what? Ty and Scott mixed great. I wouldn't have thought those two would have got along great, and they do. Even though Ty is like the height of Scott's knee.
Funny.
You were so right when you tweeted that it was a good episode to be tall because there were so many things that what can you do if you're Ty? You just can't do anything.
But yeah, I said it was a good episode to be tall on Twitter, and certainly, Scott Pollard was able to shoot those baskets. But, being tall was not a huge advantage for them in stacking the blocks. And according to Scott and his secret team, they had a huge lead and it wasn't really a factor for them.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, because they listened to Peter's idea of, hey, let's stack the boxes in the middle, which seems like a horrible idea. You would think that they would throw that out immediately.
It does seem like a horrible idea. Like, Debbie and Neil have done a great job with any of those like mind puzzles so far. They seem like they're the MVPs of brain puzzles so far.
Well, Debbie has said that puzzles lay down for her like lovers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's spicy.
Ding, oh,
I mean,
ka-ching,
she is a part-time model after all, so of course they just come flying.
Yeah, that's one of the perks of part-time modeling.
Yeah, I guess so. I think you're right. I think Ty and Debbie are the headliners. Everybody else is going to just be some muted version of anything besides this. So just some muted, version hanging out.
I mean, there's not any other real combinations I can think of that do not include either a Debbie or a tie. I don't know. Like, it's like, oh, I can't wait to see what's going to happen when Nick and Scott meet up.
It's funny. If like Peter was still in, I think maybe Peter and Debbie would have made maybe for some interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. Or like Sydney and Peter, or even like Jason and Peter would have maybe been like an interesting conflict there. Cause you can imagine that they probably would have an interesting reaction to him too, but ripperoni pepperoni, as we say on Twitch.
Right. So, wait till when Julia and Neil get on the beach for the same time. That's going to be explosive.
Fireworks.
He makes ice cream. She loves ice cream.
What will happen next? Live on CBS.
This Wednesday. It's the ice cream social. You won't forget Julia and Neil. Okay. Let's take a question from a different Neil. This is Neil from Ireland. Wants to know about Jeff Probst's take on this season coming into it. Have you heard any of the hype or lack of hype about this season from Jeff before it started?
No. Now, you and I have had conversations about how, as a listener and of so many of your podcasts, Rob, Better Call Saul, Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, I don't miss too many of your podcasts, okay? And it always drives me crazy when you guys talk about next week's episode from the previews or other sort of things that aren't part of the canon of the show. So, yeah, I am not a big fan of that stuff, so I try not to read any of the pre-things. I want a pure experience every week. So I have not heard much, but through you guys, I have heard that this was not a hyped season, but that's been very enjoyable so far. So let's hear, I guess, the question.
Okay, Neil.
Hi, Rob. This is Neil calling from Ireland. So we've talked a lot about Jeff Probst and how he hasn't really hyped up this season at all. And if you look back at seasons that he has hyped up, it includes Worlds Apart and Carmoan and Redemption Island. And none of these seasons were particularly well received. All of them feature in the bottom 10 seasons in your rankings. And seasons have gone by since, such as Philippines and Blood vs. Water and Cagayan. And all three of those weren't really hyped by Probst and are in the top 10 of the season's rankings on your website. So do you think if Jeff does hype up a season, it's more likely that it's not going to be that good? Whereas if he says nothing at all, it's probably going to be better than you expect. Thanks.
Yeah, is it a counterintuitive thing that when Jeff says the season is good, that he's actually trying to, like, you know, he's bluffing?
Yeah, he's trying to, like, just sell it because he knows it's not that great. So he's like, oh, yeah, this is a good one. Yeah, I mean, kind of like the ice cream challenge on the beach sort of situation. I mean, yeah, I can see that maybe being the case, but I mean, this is also kind of why, like, because I know I'm going to watch every episode, right? I don't need a preview to tune in next week. I'm going to be there 100%, right? So to me, I don't even really listen to the hype things. I try to just decide on my own whether I like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, I've enjoyed this season. I mean, this has been a very reasonable season of Survivor. I do think that Neil has a point that there have been some seasons that I guess had been more hyped that turned out to be not so great. But I mean, I feel like this has been pretty good all in all. I mean, what could happen that was made this so flat the rest of the way through that he was like, yeah, don't get too excited about it. I don't know. This seems like a pretty reasonable season. Let me ask you this question, Rob. Do you think that the order in which they aired these seasons has some indication as to the quality of it? Like, because they aired this one out of order?
Boy,
do you think that has something to do with it?
You know, I used to think that. I used to think that maybe they shot the season and was like, oh, this one's a dud. Let's bury it. We need a strong show in the fall. Let's do the vote. Let's get everybody excited. And then we'll just sort of like blow past this one. And then, you know, get to our next season coming up. But no, it's been a really, really strong season. So I don't know exactly what's going on. And I guess we'll have to see. There's still a lot of Survivor left to be played. We're not even halfway there. We've only seen 6 episodes. And typically a Survivor season gets to about 14 episodes. And then with the reunion show. So we'll see. Ultimately, still a lot of game to be played. But it'd be hard to imagine how this ends up being a really flat post-merge game here. Unless just like, you know, we have a little bit of a merge bump and then one side just completely cleans out the other side and there's very little intrigue going forward. But I would bet against that too.
Yeah, well, there's not like a clear line, like looking at the merge coming up now, there's not really like a clear line of where that would be that case, right? There's not like there's a strong dominant 6 or anything like that. So yeah, we'll see. But I think maybe the Jeff just kind of cooled off this season and just maybe didn't promote it super heavily, but I've enjoyed it. So what more is there to question than that for now, I guess.
Right. All right. Our own Alex Kidwell has a theory about this. All right, here's Alex's theory.
We're halfway through the game, and everyone's still baffled about why Jeff wouldn't be high on this season. But it gets me thinking. Can't you see a scenario where sometime in the near future, Jason and Scott find a way to get Ty to let them hold the idol or something, and then Ty needs it, and they just kind of like look up to the sky and ignore him in the moment where his torch gets snuffed? Couldn't you see that as like some big, outrageous moment that would ignite the fan base and make Jeff realize that, ooh, people are going to be down on this? And what do you think, guys?
Do you think it's possible that Ty gets screwed out of his idol by Jason and Scott, and that's why Jeff might be down on the season.
Oh, that's an interesting theory. Maybe there's some sort of like something like that, some sort of like controversial, weird sort of like the nice guy gets screwed sort of thing. Even if that happens, though, wouldn't that still make it for like dramatic TV? Like, I mean, I don't know. Ding, to me, that sounds like...
Yes, you're right. No, I think Jeff would love that. And I think that he would be hyping that. If you go back to, I believe it was in Survivor Fiji. I'm pretty sure back during, and I mean, that sounds pretty close to the Yao Man dreams scenario with the car. Yeah. Pretty sure that from the start of the season, Jeff is like, "Yo, there's going to be something that's going to happen. Like, there's going to be a really big betrayal that happens this season. You guys just wait and see. We've never had anything like this before."
That was when he was like promised the car, and then whatever. Who was the guy that didn't get him the car?
Yao Man in Dreams, where it was, I believe it was at the final six that they, you know, Dreams was homeless guy and he didn't have a car and it was like a truck, and Yao Man won the truck and he said, "Hey, I'll give you this truck if when we get down to the final four, you just, if you win the immunity, you give me the immunity." Dreams like, "Okay, great. That's a great deal." And then, you know, sure enough, they get down to the final four and, you know, Dreams won the immunity and he said, "Yeah, I'm not going to give you the immunity." And then Yao Man got voted off and he still gave him the truck.
Yeah.
But
You would think if that was the case, a similar situation, that Jeff would be like, "You guys wouldn't believe the twist that's coming." Yeah. Like, you could still spin that as a dramatic thing. So maybe, but
the audience did not love that. But, you know, from a TV show, I think that they loved that went on sort of like gave some intrigue to the home stretch of that season. So I kind of feel like that the production, I think, would like it if that happened, even if they lost a fan favorite in Ty.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not really sure what the reason is. I mean, could it be so much as the fact that like Jeff just, I mean, didn't put the, like, just had other things going on, that he just like didn't do like the media tour like he usually does? Like, what do you, does anything specifically strike you as like, "Oh, Jeff usually does X, but this time he didn't," besides just like in the hyperbole that he uses to describe the season?
You know what? It also is that he's you know, a human being who has his own experience. For whatever reason, like, maybe he didn't have that much fun making the season. And so in his mind, in his perspective, like, "Oh, this is not that good. This is not that fun." But it doesn't mean that that's necessarily the case. So
you think all the evacs and like the weird medical situations that went on,
conditions from what we hear. Like, maybe it was just like, you know, the conditions were really hard on Jeff too, and he wasn't feeling it when he was there.
Can I ask my own Rob Cesternino question here? Because I would really love to ask you, when everybody is freaking out and there's that big crazy moment where it's like all hands on deck, everybody's dropping like flies. It's a crazy situation. You can only imagine what that's like in real life. Is there a reason why the ER doctor isn't helping and assisting with all these things going on? Peter's just like chilling. Yeah. Is he not?
From what I understand, like, I don't think he was allowed to go and help the people from the other tribes. I think that they told him that he wasn't. And maybe you're saying like, "Okay, it's all hands on deck. Let's get him going around and helping other people too." So I don't know how much, you know, he was tending to Debbie in that moment. Or maybe, like, I think that they were like, it was a fine line between, okay, so what if they say, "Okay, you can go help the other people," and then, you know, he's saving Sydney. That's something that's a little bit outside of the game in terms of like, "Okay, well, actually, Peter's a really solid guy. He really helped out Sydney when she was down and out." So I think that they probably felt like, we have trained professionals on hand, and, you know, maybe if there was some piece of advice that he was able to give them, maybe like they would listen to him. But I think that they felt like, okay, that this is unfair in the game for him to have that opportunity.
That seems very, very fair. I mean, I can never remember anything like that ever happening where they really had like a catastrophe sort of a situation going down. So that to me was just crazy, bizarre TV for sure. Do you think they're ever going to go back to that location again after that? I mean, they were there for two seasons, right? That was the last two, right? This one and the one before it.
Yeah.
I think they're ever going to go back to this place. Mm. I mean, it seems like kind of brutal.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. I don't think they had that much fun in terms of the production. So I would sense not. I mean, that was something like Cambodia is not someplace that they had ever gone before. And it was the first time in a while they had gone to someplace completely new, where I think that all of the seasons since 20 had either been in the Philippines, Samoa, or Nicaragua. I think
Nicaragua,
and
yeah.
they sort of like had been rotating those three places really since Survivor 20. And then they went to Cambodia for the first time. And we'll see where Survivor goes next. But it's really just those three places had been sort of like in a loop. So at least they're trying to break out of the Samoa, Philippines, Nicaragua triangle.
Makes sense.
All right.
Makes
sense. I got one more voicemail question for you. This is from one of the other great voicemailers, Ron from Toronto, who's traveling this week and who's in California. Here's Ron in California.
Hi, Robin, Jason. It's Ron calling in from California. What has a better chance of happening? Mr. Survivor 2017 Tai Trang or Miss Survivor 2017 Debbie Wanner winning the season? Or you making to the World Series of Poker final table sometime during the next 10 years? Take care.
Okay. All right. Let me just make sure I understand the question. So I think the question was that Tai Trang is Mr. Survivor. Then he said Miss Survivor Debbie wins the season. I'm not sure if Debbie wins the season but doesn't win Miss Survivor, I'm not sure if that counts. But we'll just say that the second thing is Debbie wins the season or you making it to the World Series Poker final table in the last 10 years. Well, that seems like that's got to be the most likely to happen, right?
I mean, I assume he doesn't mean that it's you, Rob, making the final table.
No, well, that would be very amazing. Unlikely.
my Sester Nino apprentice, that would be great. Man,
that would be awesome. So... I mean, what are we going to rank those three things?
Well, I mean, also, here's the thing that when people say the World Series of Poker, to you, Rob, you probably think of that one tournament, the main event of the World Series of Poker, which is the one that's on ESPN. They pay for $8 million, and that has 8,000 people in it. That's very hard to make the final table, right? Like, if I play in the next
10 years.
Yeah, so 10 years, you know, if let's say I make the final table every year, like I'm 1 in 3,000 to make the final table. That means I'm 3 times more likely than anybody else. The odds of that in 10 years is still not all that likely. So I think I would actually maybe pick, if it was Ty, Ty has a better chance of being Mr. Survivor.
Okay, right? So that's probably the most likely of the three. So then what's the second most likely? You getting to the World Series of Poker final table sometime in the next 10. You have 10 shots to do it.
Yeah.
Debbie.
You're saying main event only.
Only has one shot to win this season.
Yeah. I would bet on myself. I'm a confident guy, Rob. Yeah. I'm gonna play every year. You know, let's try to get it done. Also, if Ron happens to mean the World Series of Poker, all the events, then it's not that hard to make the final table of an event out there. If I play 30 events every year, there are much smaller fields outside the main event. I already have one World Series of Poker bracelet. I have like 5 final tables. It's not that crazy of a thing. So I'm gonna pick me, Rob.
Okay.
That's it.
And you're also you'll probably even get better at poker in over the next 10 years. I don't know when will you peak? When will it start to go downhill?
Yeah, I probably peaked in my poker career like 5 years ago, though, to be honest.
No, so why do you say that?
Well, because there was a time, Rob, where I feel very confident that I was like top 25 no limit hold'em tournament player in the world. You know, I had crushed online, crushed live. I was working like crazy. I was obsessed every day. I just read books, watched videos, played poker, talked poker. There was nothing else. That was it. And that was like 5-6 years ago. These days I hang out, I have a robotic bird, I talk on stream, you know. This is not the warrior mindset that you need to be a top crusher, you know. I'm just a happy guy talking on the internet all day long. You know what that's like? It's a good life, but it's not a warrior mindset.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like I could go off in a whole tangent talking about that and exploring that, but we gotta keep moving. You know, every week on the voicemail show, we get so many musical submissions into the show. We narrow it down to our finalists, and I like to let the voicemail guests decide the winner of the weekly RHAP song competition.
Oh, nice.
So first up this week, the first contender this week is that we got a submission from Aaron Robertson and our own Jordan Kalish, who had a song about Dr. Peter being voted out of the game. Are you ready for song submission number one for this week?
Oh my God, so ready.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Chuck 108. Oh yeah! Robertson and Kalish, let's go! The Blue Brains Tribe had a malcontent, and he president. Debbie Neal, Aubrey and Joe got Liz out first, but now it's time to go. Dr. Peter, you don't have a clue. I got a good case for voting you. Since the reality is really a scoot, I got a good case for voting you.
All right. All right. Dr. Peter.
That's amazing. That's a 24-hour turnaround, right? I mean, you don't know Dr. Peter is going home until today.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Very impressive. Okay. So that's Aaron and Jordan with the good case for voting you for Dr. Peter. That's song submission number one.
Oh my God, the bar is so high. How could that be beaten?
Right. And then we have our reigning champion for the music competition, our good friend Shut Up Tim, who has a song. And this is about Debbie and Nick from John Carroll Mellencamp. Okay, here we go. This is Debbie and Nick.
A little story about Debbie and Nick. One's a part-time model and the other's kind of a prick. Now Miss Debbie thinks Nick looks like a Greek god, and Nick mansplaining to Michelle, now that was quite odd. But oh yeah, this is co-wrong. Only gonna get more interesting now that Dr. Peter's gone. I said oh yeah, this is co-wrong. Someone Google Debbie's model pics and find one with a thong.
All right, that was wow. Shut Up Tim. Yeah, he's the reigning champion of the music competition. God. All right.
Rob, your universe is so talented. It's amazing.
Now, and usually we just have two contenders, but this week, maybe because you were going to be on, we actually have, in honor of Three Tribes also, wow, we have a third contender here. Are you ready?
I'm so ready. I can't wait.
All right. This is a song by Doug Potter, and we call this one Peter Goes. Peter Goes. Here we go.
Okay.
Peter Goes. Peter Goes. He can tend to Liz Markham's wounds. Peter Goes. Peter Goes on a trip with some beautiful goons. Aubrey's gotta care what Joe's going to say when the merge comes on. Jason's gonna crush them all anyway.
Okay. That was Peter Goes by Doug Potter. All right.
All right.
Now, wow, the moment of truth.
Oh, the drum roll. Wow. The pressure. Wow. Rob, I have to say, there are no losers here. There are only winners.
There's a
right?
few.
Okay, well, of the three we heard, there are no losers. There are only winners. And I gotta say, this is the toughest decision that I've made all day, and I've made a lot of tough decisions today. And I'm gonna go with Dr. Peter. I got a good case for voting you.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, I think Dr. Peter. I got a good case for voting you. I got a good case for voting that the song of the
all
week.
All right. So well, congratulations to Jordan and Aaron, the winners of this week's song competition.
Amazing. There you go. There you go.
All right. All right.
We did it.
All right. So are you ready to get into the Survivor social media this week?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm totally ready.
All right. Survivor social media this week. Okay. Hit it, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than crossing off Julia to write Pete. Tweets.
Boy, I'm really going to miss these survivors that rhyme with tweet. Every week.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. I'm so excited. Let's get some tweets.
Okay. All right. Now, do you follow a lot of the survivors on social media?
I got to be honest. I don't. I just recently followed Fishback because, you know, it's funny because I watch every week. Now I've missed the know-it-alls in 5 years or something. But I just recently took the plunge. I followed Tyson, Boston Rob, Coach, you, and Fishback. I think that's it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a good group. It's a good group.
Yeah, very solid.
Now, we've talked about Ty Trang and his bromances this season. First with Beast Mode Cowboy, then with Scott Pollard, but there is maybe even a another bromance on the horizon with Ty Trang.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, it all started when Russell Hance was tweeting about that his favorite player on this season is Ty Trang. And then they got into a exchange on Twitter where Ty Trang was talking about how the feeling was mutual with Russell Hance.
That seems incredibly unlikely. If there is one survivor that I would think Russell would not like, it would be Ty. I mean, listen, I listened to your last interview you did with Russell. It was the most like profane thing I had ever heard in my life. I was like, this is like bizarro. Rob has a podcast. This is insane.
Yeah.
So somehow I don't see Ty and Russell getting along.
Yeah.
Ty, who like won't hurt a grasshopper, and Russell, who I feel like would run it over with his tractor trailer or whatever it is he's driving. I don't know. That's crazy, though.
Russell was tweeting to Ty and says, I'm just a big teddy bear, Ty. Don't let the hype fool you. And Ty Trang said, my friends are dancing in Happy Bear Circle. Welcome and await your visit to our sweet San Francisco den.
Can I also just say that as much as I like your Russell impression, nothing came close to your Tony. When you were just doing it every week, oh my God, that was what made me really...
Tony was a gift to all of us.
Tony was a gift to everyone. I miss Tony so much. And, all right, so Ty and Russell, getting along great.
And and Russell said to Ty, you might be seeing me pretty soon. Be nice to me, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought Russell was like a band could never go to a Survivor reunion show again or something.
Well, I think he's going up to San Fran maybe to visit Ty.
Oh.
He says, Ty said, nothing but to please and learn from you, sir, at Russell Hance, the legendary. Pretty soon, my birthday wish is coming true already.
Wow. That's an amazing situation. Could you imagine that reality TV show? Ty and Russell?
A bromance. Yeah.
That would be a legendary bromance. I can only imagine. The Texan Russell against the sweet, couldn't hurt a butterfly.
Yeah.
Tie.
That being said, Russell, a little Monday morning quarterback, said, I have to say, I didn't agree with your move to not play the idol and save Anna Kate. I think saving her was your best move. So Russell wanted to keep her on the show. And on top of that, yeah, I think he really was bummed out about Anna Kate going out on the show, because last night, he tweeted after the show, this episode of Survivor was maybe the worst I've ever seen. It needs to be a lot better or they will be in trouble. Hashtag Survivor. So boy, we were raving about it. What a season, what an episode. Russell says this was the worst. I didn't even like this episode.
Just talking about yesterday's episode specifically, not talking about the season generally, right? Just
He's incredibly down on the season. He said that somebody asked him why, Russell, this was such a good episode. He said it was just too slow for me. Too slow. And he's even really down on the Survivor franchise as a whole. He says it keeps dropping in the numbers. It will get canceled. That's the bottom line.
Wow. I mean, don't you think that's a little bit sour grapes, though? Because Russell's, you know, he had said so long his dream was to win this and this. And now he's like basically drawing dead to ever go back on at this point, right? I mean, it would take somewhat of a miracle. Wasn't there some sort of a weird thing with like the producers and him that he somehow behaved poorly in some situation? So maybe he's just sour grapes.
I think there's a lot of stuff going on there. He also tweeted, I read The World Ends in 2012. And that Sandra was the best to ever play. So, like I said, don't believe everything you read.
Hey, come on. Can't be too upset about Sandra. Come on. Two-time champion. That's impressive.
He's not buying the hype. He's not buying it. Nick had a series of tweets after the episode talking about him and Debbie together. He said, Debbie and I did a duo confessional together, but it became NSFW pretty quickly, and it ended pretty quickly. Sorry, Deb.
Wow. That's impressive that they would even do a two-person confessional. Has that ever happened? I can't even remember the last time that happened.
It's rare. It's rare when they do it, but I would have liked to have seen it.
I'm sure Debbie was enjoying it, too. It sounds like it got kind of hot and heavy in there. Ooh.
She's a fan. She's a fan.
Yeah.
Damn, Debbie.
Damn, Debbie. Cool down.
Now, I know that you are very particular about the food that you eat. Last night, they had a bunch of sandwiches. Eliza was tweeting about the sandwiches that were eligible to have been won. She tweeted, tuna salad? Gross. At Jeff Probst, seriously? You trying to give people food poisoning in this heat?
That's true. Can you imagine? I mean, I can't because I've never even had a tuna sandwich, but I can only imagine how gross that must be in the middle of Cambodia getting a tuna sandwich. I mean, it sounds like prison food. Did they borrow that from the nearest Cambodian prison? That seems less than delicious.
And right now, my gut tells me, go use the bathroom.
Yeah. I would avoid any of the mayonnaise-based sandwiches on Survivor in the 120-degree Cambodian heat.
Oh, my God. I can only imagine how disgusting that is. Yeah, no thanks.
Bro, I know.
Just say no. Just say no, bro. Don't eat the tuna fish. It's like the trap. Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Gross.
A fish back out of water once again.
Yeah.
yeah.
All right. Is that how Steven got the severe gastrointestinal distress? Did he have the tuna on
Survivor?
Maybe
they gave him a tuna sandwich. That was how it all began.
The tuna
that was
fish how the back?
Whole yeah. awful pain began. Yeah.
All right. Randy, who's one of my favorite Survivor tweeters, that he was on fire again during the episode last night, that he tweeted, I have no idea who is leaving tonight, but rest assured, they will be campaigning for a second chance tomorrow. Hashtag ridiculous.
What does that even mean? He's just saying he's like, is that really going to happen? I doubt it.
That people that get everybody that goes on Survivor, then they come on these podcasts and they campaign to go back on.
Yeah, they just did a second chance season, though. I mean, are we really going to see a second chance season anytime soon? I don't know. You're more in the loop on this than me, but... I don't know. I mean, there are definitely survivors in the last few years that I think have easy campaigns to come back. Like Rodney, to me, stands out as one that we got to come back, right? What was the name of the female? You got to relax, bro. What do you think? Another bro, by the way. What do you think the name of the cop from Tony's season who voted out the merge?
Sarah?
Sarah. I'd love to see her come back. Sarah, yeah, she is great. I loved her. Who's your top contender? Someone you want to see come back play again?
Besides Tony?
Second chance, yeah.
So your second chance, so I've got to give you somebody. Non-winner. Somebody like who only played one time.
Yeah.
Boy, off the top. And I mean, can it be somebody like that was like left at the altar, like a T-Bird? Could we give somebody like that?
Sure. Yeah, sure. You could take one of the rejects, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we went through, I think, all of the snubs of people that they didn't include. Yeah, I feel like Rodney would be fun. I like the hot rod.
Also, it just occurring to me, because you had pointed out that Russell has said something about Survivor being canceled because the ratings are declining. Yeah, but the ratings for television generally are declining so insanely as we move towards this.
It's not a valid point of what he's saying. I have to agree with the first point you made about sounds like some sour grapes.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is they're still drawing like almost 10 million viewers per episode, maybe a little bit less.
Holding strong for Survivor.
Yeah. Listen, I know how hard it is to get viewers. Okay. We get like 8,000 people that watch every day. Survivor only gets, 1,000 times more viewers than I do. So like they're doing just fine.
Yeah. Survivor doesn't need help.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
Yes.
Yeah.
Survivor does not need to be carried, bro. Don't worry. Yeah.
Okay. Randy also said, is Joe the first 72-year-old bully in Survivor history? WTF. I think I hate him.
Wow. It's funny. It's so funny. I just literally the other day, I just saw the episode where Randy got voted out of
Kabong.
What was the season? Yeah.
Or Heroes vs. Villains.
Heroes vs. Villains. Yeah. For some reason that's being watched in my household right now. So yeah, I just recently saw that whole thing go down, but yeah, Randy, what a character.
He also said, Peter for second chances. He is so awesome. Just like Caleb and was robbed. Hashtag not.
Oh, wow. What a dig. What a burn on Caleb. Yeah.
The bomb doors are open. Prepare to fire.
Wow. What did that happen? I don't remember that being a thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see Peter back on Survivor. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think we'll see Peter
back. No, I think so. I mean, Peter seemed like a really nice guy again in that exit interview, but I don't think that there's a clamoring for a Peter return.
Caleb, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
You were into the Beast Mode Cowboy?
Yeah. I thought Caleb was great. And oh my God, that whole Caleb and Ty relationship going on was absolutely amazing. You know, I don't watch Big Brother, so I didn't know Caleb from before this. But I really liked Caleb. I thought he was great.
Give me the power rankings of the Ty bromances. You have Ty and Caleb, Ty and Scott, and Ty and Russell Hance.
I definitely rate Ty and Caleb number one. I mean, that whole thing with them, like, Ty going in for a kiss, and Caleb was like, what's you doing? I mean, what in the world? That was just like, nothing like that has ever happened before in Survivor as far as I can remember, and I feel like I would remember that. And the fact that Caleb was like playing along with it, even though he's from like Kentucky or something, and it was just amazing and a testament to his character and you know, personality to, you know, be that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Scott and Ty also amazing. That's number two, and I give Russell and Ty number three because I have a hard time even believing that's real. It could just be a big troll by Russell Hance, as far as I know.
All right.
Are you in Russell? Would you consider yourselves to be friends if you just sent him a text on like a Saturday night and just said, "Hey, bro, how you doing?" Do you think he would respond back?
Like like the "you up" to kind of text, like text like that.
No,
like the Parvati like, hey, tweeted him this week. Call me. I think he would. I think he would write back to me, but I don't think there is love from Russell to me.
Okay, so if you threw like a birthday party for one of your kids and invited Russell, he probably wouldn't come.
I mean, I don't think. I think that'd be a commute for him.
That would be a bit of a commute. All right, sure. I got you.
Yeah. All right. Randy also said, hey, at Aubrey Bracco, Survivor makes millions of dollars. They will give you another parchment if you F up the first one.
That is also true. I was trying to think the other day, someone asked me how much money that I thought Survivor generated each year. Each season, and I couldn't even fathom how much money they make per commercial that they run. Like, even just per ad, they must be making hundreds of thousands of dollars per commercial break. So yeah, I'm sure they could afford more parchment if you had asked.
Yeah, I don't know what would happen if Aubrey was just like, hey, could I get a new paper? I really screwed up my first one. Aubrey,
isn't there
actually
a pile there anyway? It looks like there's a pile that you just pull the top one off.
I don't know if there is an exact amount for the people that are there. Like, I don't know if there are only six pieces of parchment there or if there's like 10 there. I don't remember from the Amazon. Aubrey did respond to Randy. She said, I really should invest in a dry erase board.
Yeah, a dry erase, like sort of a thing, like a judging sort of a panel.
Right, where get your sleeve. And go ahead and do that. This is another tweet. Let's see. From T-Bird. Always good on the Twitter. She said, good news, bad news at 47PB. I don't believe the votes had anything to do with the blocks. Hashtag sawwee. Hashtag rough crowd. Hashtag survivor.
Wow. Is that hashtag SWWWY? Is that what that is?
S-A-W-W, three W's and a Y. Sawi.
Oh, my God. I would never have guessed that. That's a tricky way to spell Sawi. Okay. Wow. Great, great quality tweet there. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then also we had Julie Berry. She tweeted, fourth category on Survivor should be emotionally intelligent. At Survivor CBS, these brains are emo dummies.
Yeah,
she said.
Yeah, I do kind of feel like, maybe you disagree with me, but I do kind of feel like the brains, brawn, beauty was not quite as like well cast, I thought, as some of the former season was. I don't know. I felt like there were some that could have kind of been in both categories. There are some that I feel like weren't necessarily in the right category. Not insulting Nick here about his looks. Nick is fine in beauty. That's fine. But I just felt like I don't know, this wasn't like the perfect sort of...
I mean, I think it's pretty much they just said, like, close enough.
Yeah, you kind of fit in the categories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, whatever. Yeah. We just need three tribes.
Yeah, sure.
But do you think that they should go with Julie Berry's idea of a fourth tribe of the emotionally intelligent tribe?
Yeah, sure. I think those people would be, it'd be interesting to see how they casted those people.
I think, guys, with all due respect to Julie, I think that's probably a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
Like brains, brawn, beauty, and emotionally intelligent.
Yeah, emotionally stable and level individuals in the Force tribe.
Right.
That sounds like pretty bad TV.
Right.
To be honest. We need people changing things up a little bit. Come on.
This is the tribe that they get by on their strength. This is the tribe that gets by on their brains. This is the tribe that gets by on their looks. And this is the tribe that is very empathetic to other people.
Yeah, they just really feel a lot of things. And they are really in tune with their inner
selves.
They're
very intuitive.
Yeah, this is the beauty tribe. And these are the beautiful on the inside tribe. Yes.
Brains, brawn, beauty, and betazoids.
Wow. I had no idea what you were going to say there. You pulled it out, though. Wow. I could not think of a B word for emotional anything. And found one. There you go.
Yeah. That's all right. Very nerdy joke. Okay. I'll give you for your boy, Rodney. Rodney _ Boston said, Peter, you talked way too much, brah.
Bro, I know.
He did talk quite a lot. I mean, I feel like Peter, if you could have given Peter one piece of advice before this episode, you would have said, shut your mouth and you'd be fine. And he probably would have been fine if he had just done that.
Shut your mouth, homie G.
I mean, you got to say that's right. If Peter had just said, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm taking a vow of silence this episode. He would not have been voted out, right? There's no way.
Well, it really comes down to, I think maybe he might have, maybe because... It really comes down to, did Scott and Ty get the idea to go after him because he talked too much? Because if it would have then come down to some sort of a 3-3 split, like what are Scott and Ty doing if they feel like Peter's in lockstep with Aubrey and Joe?
They could be easily go with Julia,
or they
right?
Just say go. Do they say, hey, let's try to vote Peter off here and try to get Aubrey to flip? Or do they say, let's just do the easy vote and vote out Julia?
I think especially if they happen to get the flicker of the sense that they're merging coming up soon, then I think that would have made them even more. Like, to me, that was their biggest argument against it. They didn't want to be 3-2, right? Mm-hmm. So if they had that thought that they were going to necessarily not be in that spot, maybe they would have just pulled the trigger, voted for Julia.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Aubrey and Joe see Peter in the water with Julia. Everybody else is kind of just generally annoyed at Peter, right? It wasn't that hard to rally the troops against Peter because everyone kind of had that distrust, dislike for what he had done and said. I think, one of those things, I forget which one of, I think maybe either you or Tyson was like, your job in this, the first pre-stage of Survivor is to just like not shake the boat all that much. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Peter was like doing laps around the boat as much as he could. Like he was not just like surviving and just chilling. He was kind of, being a bit of a snake in the grass, kind of, you know, it's not the rep you want to have.
It's not the rep you want to have. And then last but not least, Diane Ogden at Ogden Diane, who's been live tweeting this season out of nowhere. Wow. Just say a total blindside.
Total blindside.
All right. She says, Nick handling those blue balls pretty well.
Wow. Okay.
So maybe she's liking that angular face also.
Yeah, maybe that's doing more work. Yeah, maybe that's what gets the honeys excited. Who knew?
Whoa. All right. Whoa. Jason Somerville, finishing up your 10th hour of talking into a microphone for today, right?
I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Let's do another 10 more. I'm gonna do 8 more in 12 hours. So yeah, that's how we do. All day, every day, 7 days a week.
What do you do? How do you not lose your voice?
I've never had that problem. Actually, I've said this to you before, so this is not a surprise, but I truly, always, when I was just like a poker player, I was shocked at how much content you put out that was always such high quality and diverse as well. So I really did look up to you and what you had built with your, community, with Rob Has a Podcast when I started streaming. And I was like, you know what? I too can make content every single day. Started out 30 minutes a day and then did an hour a day. And then here we are in this insane world we live in now where I do 8 hours a day. Can't even believe that this is my real life. But I don't know. It's just amazing. It's great. It's great because at least when you're doing it live, people are always talking to me. You know, we have thousands of people who are chatting, tweeting, hanging out, having a good time. So I have fun every day. When that changes, I'll be not happy. You must have fun every day too, Rob. Tell me you don't.
No, I do have a lot of fun. And yeah, some days are more fun than others, but you know, go back to what you were saying, I do greatly appreciate the compliment, and I'm very happy that you were able to, take this and turn it into such a empire that you have built here with what you're doing. And so very, very happy to see all of your success.
Well, thanks, Rob. And I'm totally down if the day comes when we both have off seasons, if you want to do like a podcast about like podcasting, not that I'm a podcaster in the sense that you are, but in like a podcast about like content creation and the business, things like that. People ask me a lot of questions about these things. I'm sure you get questions about that too, about like what it takes to be successful and some of the lessons that we've learned. And I always enjoy talking, like you and I could talk on the phone about that for an hour, doing it into a podcast so others can learn as well. Totally down someday. I'm sure the fans would love to have more of like a meta podcast about some of the lessons that you've learned building your YouTube channel and your live streams, all the technology that you use, you know, do that sort of thing live. I think the fans would love it. So totally down to do that. Anything. And I want to make this clear on this podcast. If you ever need a B team, Wiggler says, I can't do it. You need someone else to hop in on a Walking Dead recap. Oh my God. I'm so ready. So ready. You put up the Jay Carver signal. You light up, you know, you just put a turkey burger outside your doorstep. I will be there ready to podcast about Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Better Call Saul. I'm ready.
Okay. All right.
So ready.
This is huge news. This is huge news.
This is huge.
Okay. Well, whether it's a podcast about podcasting, which I would do just to pick your brain, or we'll talk Walking Dead. I did get a question. Somebody sent in a question about they wanted you to pick who's going to die next on The Walking Dead, but I thought that would be too spoilery.
Well, but you see, the thing is, I don't read the comics or watch the previews, so I don't know anything more. Yeah, but
there are people that are like, haven't even watched the season yet, so people get complaints on it, trust me on that.
Yeah. No, I didn't want to talk about other shows on this podcast, because who knows what's going on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally down for any of that stuff, and I can't wait to hang out with you in Reno. It will actually be the first time that we'll meet in person, right?
Yes. Have
we
met before? First time in person. I'm very excited to get out there in just a couple months, the end of May. Run it up reno.com, and we'll have more announcements on this as we get closer, some more people. We're going to do a lot of podcasting that week. You know, you're going to do a lot of card playing. I'm going to try not to embarrass myself, but it's going to be a really, really fun time out in Reno.
Yeah, you're going to play the main event at least. You're going to play the main event for sure. Hopefully you're going to be our Run of the Reno main event champion. That would just be amazing.
That would be a real embarrassment to everybody else. I think everybody else would walk away feeling really bad about themselves if that happened.
Everybody else just phoned it in and just, you know, you just take down the trophy. But that would be awesome. Yeah, May 24th to 30th at Peppermill. If you've never been there before, it's a beautiful resort in Reno, Nevada. This will be like our fourth or fifth event there. We had about 500 people last time. People flew from Denmark and Sweden and Dublin to come hang out with us all across the U.S. and Canada. It was so much fun. It was great hanging out with Boston Rob Tyson and Coach, and you coming and bringing some other cool people there too. It's going to be great. If you've listened to 2 hours of this podcast, I guarantee you will have a good time. So come hang out with us. You can learn more about it, runitupreno.com. And you can always hang out with me every day, runitup.tv. So I'm always over on Twitch, chilling, playing poker. Hard to miss us, right, Rob? Us Long Island kids, we're downright prolific, you could say. Everywhere you want to be.
We're very predictable in terms of you know where to find us. Like I wonder what these guys are doing today. Like, oh yeah, they're exactly where they said they were going to be.
Yeah, exactly. There's no big surprises. Like once in a while, I'll put on pants, but like that's a very special occasion. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, usually naked from like the waist down, but once in a while, you know, special occasions.
Yeah, what's your shower schedule?
I have to have a regular sort of like, you know, at the very end of the day, like 1 a.m. sort of like just rinse my brain off. It almost feels
so you'll
like
shower as I after you do the streaming.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I couldn't before. Like, you know, I feel usually pretty exhausted by about this time of day. You know, it's 1:30. I started streaming at 3. So it's usually at the end of the night, okay, day is over, reset. Because, you know, every day, no day is off. You have to do something to, like, break the day up to some extent. That's what I do.
I'll usually be like a pre-live show, which I typically end up doing my live stuff around like around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my time. So I'm typically around that. But if there's a, like, if there's a day that goes by where it's like I'm just doing only audio podcasts, like there's a good chance like that may not be happening.
Yeah, I've noticed that for the Survivor shows, you tend to shave and be a little bit more like clean up a little bit for the Survivor shows. Sometimes the Walking Dead shows, yet you bring in like the Ragged Rick look to the podcast. You know, I just go, wow, okay, this is not the shower level podcast. Just
Rick at Alexandria or Rick just out in the wild.
Yeah, Rick in the. I've never seen you look like Rick in the wild on the podcast. I'm sure that would be a scary thing for the viewers. If you just showed up one day covered in mud and a little bit of blood and just had a bad attitude and started growling at Josh Wiggler. That would be quite the thing.
Yeah, Peter, I've got 3 questions for you this week. Okay, number 1. Yeah. All right.
How many survivors have you voted out? I don't know. What would be the 3 questions? I'm not even sure. Or 2 questions, right? Is it walkers you killed, people you killed?
Yeah. And then the last one is why. So we'll figure that out. Yeah. Jason Somerville, fantastic job. At Jason Somerville on Twitter, runitupreno.com. Can't wait to get out there. And this was so much fun. Thank you for being so generous with your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my God. For sure. It's an absolute pleasure. You keep doing amazing things. You know, my truth, I tell this to everybody, not just because I'm on the podcast with you, but you do an absolutely amazing job. And I personally listen to like at least 3 of your podcasts every week. So keep doing a great job. Everybody loves it. You're doing awesome out there, Rob. So thanks for having me on the show. I'm sure we'll work together soon. And I'll see you in Reno in just 2 months, but I'm sure we'll talk before then.
All right. Take care, Jason.
See you soon, Rob.
Bye. All right, everybody, there you have it. Jason Somerville back here on Rob's podcast. And I really do appreciate him making the time to come on here with me. He's a guy who's really, really busy, very successful, and take some time to talk with us here about Survivor. Always do appreciate that. All right. So here's where we're going from here. Next up, going to talk some Big Brother Canada on Friday. There was a wild episode that aired on Thursday night. I'll be talking about that live on Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Andy Herron will be our guest. Also, Taryn Armstrong will join us to talk about the live feeds. Then I will connect with Stephen Fishback to talk about this episode. We'll check in with Stephen before we get back to know-it-alls. Heard a rumor this week that this Wednesday will be the 100th Survivor Know-It-Alls episode. So that will be a big celebration this Wednesday night when Steven and I reconvene at 9:15 p.m. Eastern. Plus, I'll speak with David Bloomberg to talk about why Peter lost on our weekly roundup there. All right. So that's going to do it for this podcast. Have a happy Easter for everybody celebrating this weekend. I know Dominic is very excited about that because he loves plastic eggs. That's one of his great joys in life. Watches a lot of YouTube videos about surprise eggs. So this is a huge weekend for him. He's very excited. Also, just want to say, as always, thanks so much from the support of the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. Thank you guys so much for allowing me to be podcasting this much. Always appreciate it. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, go to robisawebsite.com/patron. Have a great weekend, everybody. Looking forward to reading your comments about the show at robisawebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.
The Blue Brains Tribe had a malcontent, and he looked like the president. Debbie Neal, Aubrey and Joe got Liz out first, but now it's time to go. Dr. Peter, you don't have a clue. I got a good case for voting you. Since the reality is really a scoot, I got a good case for voting you.
Ow! Woo!
You've got a pretty face. You're from the ER. But unlike Clooney, you didn't go far. Joe's FBI, he can smell a plot, and he knows your tail is taller than Scott.
You don't have a clue. I got a good case for voting you. Since the reality is really a scoot, I got a good case for voting you. Woo! Oh! Oh, Peter, 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 you've been a very bad doctor. Well, let's talk about your former tribemate. Debbie's got 30 cats, or maybe some more. Oh, but a plan to can't ignore. All been wrote down. She wrote down Julia's name, but crossed it out. Crossing out your game. You think that it was stacking some blocks, but you're so, so game. Oh, it made it a lot. Dr. Peter, you don't have a clue. I got a good case for voting you. Since the reality is really a scoot, I got a good case for voting.